All right. So, yeah, what were we going to blame this on? Technical difficulties, engineer couldn't read the calendar or something? I don't know.
Yeah!
Welcome
Hello,
to the...
and welcome to the D&D podcast, DementedDungeonsAndDragons.com, where we talk about everything but Dungeons & Dragons.
No, we talk about that, too. We just pretend we don't know what that is.
I don't know what it is.
Oh, my.
It's like when you go to prison and you say, I'm innocent.
Well, most are.
True that.
You know anything they're guilty of? They put up with the crap that they're put through.
Not complying with the New World Order rules, recognized standards, codes, and guidelines.
Right. That's the only thing they're guilty of is that they complied.
Comply or don't comply.
Well, they stick them in jail for non-compliance, but truth is, the only thing they're guilty of is the whole masses of us generally comply. And we should generally not comply. But, yeah.
And if we're forced to comply, let them know that we do not consent.
Yep. By the way, folks, this program is for political speech and educational and entertainment purposes only, just so you know.
Yeah, we do not cure or diagnose anything.
Yep.
We do not have first-hand knowledge of most of this stuff. Most of it is hearsay evidence.
True enough. But it does fall into the category of most of it is common knowledge, even though common knowledge doesn't necessarily know a crap.
And common sense ain't all that common.
Yeah, I don't think I mentioned common sense, but okay.
Common sense is very similar to common knowledge. It's not that common.
Yeah, well, okay.
Most people are brainwashed into what big business and the New World Order wants them to know. Like, fluoride is good for you.
Now, wait a minute. You said that as if the two things are separate and have an individual existence.
What? Big business and the New World Order?
Yeah, as if they're two different things.
Well, technically they are, because the New World Order is not big business, it's big banks.
Right.
But they're in cahoots. They're in bed with each other, let's put it that way. But we're not allowed to talk about that because this isn't a porn show. It's not an X-rated podcast.
Oh, my.
Yes, and according to the New World Order rules, regulations, standards, codes, and guidelines, we are not allowed to cure or diagnose or treat anything.
Right. Including social diseases.
Right. Like... Like what?
Like the belief that government will save you.
Right. The government will protect you just like a lucky rabbit's foot will protect you.
I think the lucky rabbit's foot might actually provide a little bit more protection.
Perhaps.
I mean, it's got to be useful at least 50% of the time.
don't know, they both provide a false sense of protection.
Well, yeah.
It's just more people believe in the government one more than they do the rabbit foot.
Let's see. I got 4 goats here and 1, 2, 3 out there. Meh! Oh, it's funny. They won't even look up until I do that. It's like, oh, everybody else has gone over here. Maybe we better go join the group.
My lucky goat feet.
Yeah, I'm since I haven't been here during the day several, like, 3 days in a row, I turned the goats loose to go eat. So I'm playing midnight goat herd.
Right. Not midnight, it's only 6 o'clock.
Well, it's well after dark, so.
Well after dark.
Once we've got the whole place fenced in, then maybe I can get away with this. But considering the fact that the coyotes were in Glenn's field again, yowling last night, and when I went out, there was several dozen eyes staring back at me. The only difference is now when I shine a flashlight on them, they kind of take off running.
Yeah, they're used to being hunted. Right now.
Yeah. Yep.
We got coyote hunters in the area.
Yep. And I'll have to get my infrared scope with the with an air rifle.
I wonder
if they make an infrared scope for compound bows.
I'm sure they might.
It might be along the lines of you're wearing the scope on your head, and you shoot the arrow as normal.
No, they actually have. I think I've seen infrared on crossbows.
Yeah, we'll have to ask. I'll let you ask so that they can laugh at you.
Crossbow night vision scopes. Crossbow laser sight and flashlights.
All right. That was a quick lookup.
Yeah, so, I don't see why not.
So are they keeping you very, very busy your last week?
Oh, those are for crossbows, not for regular bows.
Oh, crossbows. Okay. Yeah, that makes more sense.
Well, actually, I Googled crossbow. Bow.
Look up compound bow. Munch, munch, crunch, crunch, munch, munch, munch.
Don't look like it, but I'm sure they do.
Yeah, I'm thinking more along the lines of you'd be wearing night vision goggles and shooting the bow as if it was daytime.
Night vision bow hunting. At the bog.
Yeah.
Night vision glasses. Yep. You're probably right. They don't have the scopes for a crossbow, although that would be freaking awesome. I mean,
well, crossbow, but not compound.
Right.
Well, it's probably freaking awesome anyway, because you probably put the scope on your head. You know, put the goggles on your head and you just look out there and everything's in bright green.
Green.
Shine your infrared light out there and they don't see a darn thing.
a wicket. It's not real, but it looks cool.
They look up and see your other green faces, and next thing you know, they have an arrow in the middle of their forehead.
Here's a laser light and flashlight slingshot.
Oh, boy. Yeah. Okay, at night, the goats definitely do not like the cats at night. They're going out of their way to attack the cats.
Yeah.
Like, you're strange, and you're moving in the tall grass, and I'm trying to eat.
You're scaring me.
So I'm going to butt you. Because I'm a butthead.
Butthead, butthead, roly-poly, butthead.
Yeah, so it took me a lot longer to make the screens than I thought it would. I cut the parts that I need, and I'll be putting a screen together tomorrow after I deliver another load of manure. I'm kind of in a toss up. I'm thinking I'll make the first one out of chicken wire. That way I'm only taking the large stuff out. You know, it'll filter it quicker. Because, like, we could be planting stuff right now. And when I do the rows of corn and stuff like that, I'm not going to bother filtering it. So they're just going to have to deal with the fact that there's going to be Johnson grass and such to compete with. Okay, that's not good. I'm hearing coyotes, and my goats are not even reacting.
They think they're safe. That's why.
Yeah.
They trust that David Ray will protect them. Batman! Oh, by the way.
By the way, what?
What's worse than Friday the 13th?
Apparently Saturday the 13th.
No, Monday the 13th.
Oh, wait a minute, that'd be today.
Yeah!
Yeah, the Day Late and a Dollar Short Show.
The Day Late and a Dollar Short Show. Welcome to the Day Late and Dollar Short Show. Hey, maybe that's what we should call our podcast.
Oh, my.
Yeah. So, I was listening to this George Gordman, I guess it was a podcast, the introduction to George Gordman. George Gordon.
Yeah, it's an 8-part thing, I think.
I think that is the same guy that I found on YouTube about a year ago.
On YouTube,
he has a raspberry patch, and his farm is called Edible Acres. Am I correct?
No, I don't think so.
Okay, his voice sounds the same. That's the reason why I asked.
He used to run when he was alive. He used to run the George Gordon School of Law of Isabella, Missouri.
Yeah. All right, well, since his deal is only like 25 minutes, I was going to play it on the podcast, and then we could do our commentary thereafter.
Sure, why not?
Because it coincides with our previous podcast.
Oh, we have previous podcasts?
Yeah. GMO, GMO, GMO is the way to go.
Oh,
Yeah, our GMO podcast.
Yeah, I can't agree with the GMO stuff.
Oh, yeah, I know. I don't agree with it either. But anyways, here we go.
It's fun to say that is what you're saying.
Yeah. I'm making mockery.
Yeah, seeing as we live in the state of Monsanto Central.
True that. Hang on, my dispatcher is... Oh, that was actually another driver. Yeah, I ran out of hours trying to get to the customer to pick up the load early. Because the load doesn't pick up till midnight. But I don't have the hours to get here at midnight, so I got here early. And they were going to load me early. But the tank wash didn't clean my trailer properly, so they rejected me. And now I can't go back to the tank wash because I'm out of hours. So I got to sit here till morning, then go to the tank wash, get re-cleaned, and then come back here tomorrow and pick up the load.
Well, you know, I'm sorry they rejected you, but I'm glad they at least had the integrity to reject a badly washed tank.
I'm just glad that I got parking. But, I mean, if they didn't have parking, I'd have to go somewhere. And I'd just have to drive until I found parking. So, I had enough hours to get to a tank wash, but it was further away. And, I didn't have the hours, actually. I would have went over my logbook by 15, 30 minutes. But my dispatcher didn't want me to go there. He wanted me to go to a different tank wash, which I could get to, but they don't have parking. So when I got there and got cleaned, I couldn't go anywhere, and I didn't have hours to go anywhere. You know? So, since these guys have parking, I figured, well, I guess I just won't go over my logbook, and I'll stay here for the night.
There you go.
So, yeah, either tank wash would have been, I would have had to go over my hours, and I would have been breaking the legal.
Right.
Not breaking the law, but breaking the legal. So anyways, yeah. Okay, here we go. Dang darn dilly. That didn't work.
Okay, we're back. Let's take a look at this thing of how to make $100,000 on 25 acres or less. Well, during the 1970s, an obscure black college professor at Tuskegee Institute in Alabama, working on a grant, by the way, that was a Rockefeller grant, if you can believe it, $250,000, he developed a unique marketing plan for agricultural products. Once they did this, the Rockefeller money dried up. Once they showed that, yeah, we could do this. This is not something that the New World Order wanted accomplished. The plan was aimed at poor rural black landowners in the South who own small acreages. Now, some of these acreages are as small as 3 acres. 3 acres. You can make $100,000 a year. I'll show you how. Now, the goal was to keep these landowners on the land by producing produce for sale to the public at retail and to generate an income that would support a family. Well, $100,000 a year gross will support a family. Now, the cost of production is about 50% of what you get out of a business enterprise. That's what we call a keystone markup. Keystone markup. You buy it for a dollar, you sell it for two. That's called a keystone. Now, in agriculture, you have a tremendous amount of input. You have chemicals and sprays, and you have labor. This operation is a four-man operation. It's a man, his wife, and two teenage children. It's a four-man operation. If you don't have two children that will work on the farm with you, then you're going to have to spend some money on labor. These are called you-pick operations, and you do as much as you can to create a you-pick operation where the customer picks the produce, and you put in a store. The Whatley program was so successful that it became known as the Whatley program, how to make $100,000 a year on 25 acres or less. That guy's name was Booker T. Whatley. There are about 4,000 of these small family enterprises operating in the United States today, 4,000. Now, there are approximately 33.6 million people, about 12% of the population, are into health food and organic. And that's spread all over the country. There's 12% of the population in North Dakota, and 12% of the population in New York, and 12% of the population in California. You can sell this produce wholesale to health food stores, but it's better if you sell your produce retail to your own customers. And so what Whatley developed was a retail marketing program where you go out and pre-sell the produce. You need 100 customers. You go to a health food store. You start talking to people who are into health foods. Would you like to contract with me to grow your food? For instance, right now, our family uses approximately 600 pounds of potatoes a year. And I would like to buy 600 pounds of potatoes a year from somebody that grows organic potatoes. I don't want to buy Monsanto New Leaf Superior potatoes that are BT and Roundup Ready. I don't want to buy that. That's what they sell in the supermarket. Now, if you had potatoes, or let me put it this way, if you had any kind of produce, fruits, vegetables, meat, etc., I would buy it from you in a heartbeat. Let me ask you the same question. Would you pay retail for organic produce? You're already paying retail for chemically produced produce in your supermarket. So if somebody would come to you and say, I've got organic potatoes, meat, milk, butter, and eggs, would you buy that from me and just pay me the same price you're now paying down at the local retail store? Would you do that? Well, most people would. Now, the average housewife is spending about $5,000 a year in the supermarket. All you want from her is $1,000. You want 20% of her food budget being spent with you on your little farm. And so what they derived, or what they created was a little farm. You divide the thing up, and you plant just what other people want to buy, what your customers want to buy. So when 100 of your customers, and this is about all you can service, is about 100 people at about $1,000 each with you, your wife, and your two children. And when you put this little operation together, you're growing just what these people want to buy. You ask, well, how many potatoes do you buy? Well, I buy about 10 pounds a week. Well, that's about 500 pounds a year, 10 pounds a week. Now, 100 pounds of potatoes, if you sold those potatoes at 10 cents a pound, it'd be about $10 a hundred, or about $60 or $70 for a year's supply of potatoes. And customers come to your store. Now, here was a neat little operation that I've seen in some of these other, well, a lot of these little mom-and-pop operations. You don't have to grow everything there on your own farm. For instance, if you're up in North Dakota, you may not have peaches, but you know there are organic peach producers all over. So what you do is you buy peaches from organic sources. And there's a lot of organic sources that you can find in Acres, USA. Acres, USA. People that have organic corn, wheat, beans, fruit, vegetables. And what you don't have, you can buy, and you can buy these at different times of the year. For instance, if you're in North Dakota, you may not have carrots, but they'll have carrots in January in the Rio Grande Valley and in Salinas, California. And what you do is you ship them in. But you have to make sure that you're buying organic and that you're selling organic. Now, health food stores are basically in the business of selling pills. You ever notice that? Go into your local health food store. There's, you know, they've got some beans and they've got a few things in there, but they don't have fresh fruits and vegetables, which is what customers want to buy, and that's where the U-Pick operation comes in. So here at the farm, we have some raised beds that we've put together, and so that I can demonstrate and I can show you how to put a $100,000 farm together. For instance, let me give you an illustration as to the value of a bed. Let's suppose that we take a bed, a raised bed, 6.5 feet wide by 60 feet long. And you've got about 400 square feet there, 6 by 60. And that little half foot in here is about 400 square feet. And you practice what we call square foot gardening, which was developed by Rodale. Now, there are a lot of organic sources. There's a lot of organic books out there, whether you're into organic or not. But if you plant garlic or lettuce, cabbage, that cabbage sells for about 50 cents a pound in the store. A head of cabbage is about 3 pounds. And let's suppose that we can sell that cabbage for 50 cents a pound, or let's get 33 cents a pound for it. A 3 pound head of lettuce is worth $1. And there's 400 square feet in a bed, and it will grow just about 400 cabbages. That's $400. Now think about that in terms of an acre. An acre has 43,560 square feet in it. Now let's talk about 3 acres, because 43,560 square feet, now take out your house and your buildings and you plant your 3 acres in truck crop like cauliflower, cabbage, rutabaga, berries, fruit, and you're shooting for $1 a square foot. That's why 3 acres will produce $100,000 a year. So if you've just got a little place, and you've got 2 or 3 acres on there, you know you can make your living. In fact, if you've got a place in the city, I've mentioned this a time or two, just 50 by 100 square feet, that's a lot, just a lot, 50 by 100 in the city. You can grow 2,000 square feet of vegetables on your own property. Think of that. That's 2,000 square feet will feed a family of 6 year-round. 2,400 square feet is about what you need to feed a family of 6 year-round. All right, now, the Watley people did a great job, but those people didn't care whether you used organic or whether you practiced chemical farming. So we took the chemical farming out of the Watley program, and we added the 15 agricultural laws. Now, God gave us 15 laws and told us, you practice these 15 laws, and you can have sustainable agriculture forever. And, of course, a question arises, is agriculture a chemical soup, or is it a living organism? Now, when you go to public school, they teach evolution and that you came from a living soup. And, of course, farming today is little more than chemical farming. It's like hydroponics. All we're going to do is feed this plant chemicals, and indeed they will grow, and they will produce. You can grow hydroponic tomatoes. They taste like wallpaper paste, and they don't have any nutrients in them, but they are tomatoes, and people sell them. Now, why don't we grow on an organic living organism called soil? Because it contains 186,000 organisms in the soil, and if all of those organisms are in there in balance, you won't have any insect problems at all, because insects only eat weak, sick plants. That's what they're designed for. So the reason that the farmer is having a problem with insects is that he never practices the land Sabbath, which is one of those 15 agricultural laws. So we have to learn about the land Sabbaths. Hybridized seed. You know, there's a law that says you shall not sow your seed with, or your field with mingled seed. That's hybridized seed. That seed produces produce that is anywhere from 75% short on protein to 600% short on iron, 345% short on copper, and so on down the line. You've probably heard me mention that over the radio a time or two. Then there's the landmark laws, cattle laws, landmarks, and the soil. How do you maintain that soil? I can show you how to do all of that. And indeed, I think that it's a better form of agriculture than chemical agriculture. In fact, if you're going to practice chemical agriculture, I would say you probably need some other kind of business, because American agriculture has been using chemicals and practicing chemical agriculture for about 100 years, and it's no longer self-sustaining, and American agriculture is going into the tank. And I think if you do it, you'll go right into the tank with them. What we need is a change. We need a change back to what works. And what works are the agricultural laws that God gave us out of Mount Sinai for the express purpose of maintaining soil fertility and human health, which is the basic reason for eating. It's health. Now, when you eat potatoes that are lacking in vitamins and minerals, you're going to get cancer, muscular dystrophy, or heart attack. So are the people who buy your produce. Now, this marketing plan only includes 100 customers. That's all you need is 100. You want $1,000, 20% from each of your customers out of their marketing budget, to pay you to grow what they want to buy. And you don't grow what people don't want to buy. Take their order, and then you go out and you plant it and grow it. So the marketing plan includes 100 customers at $1,000 each. What we're looking for here is a gross program or a gross sale of $100,000 a year. What does it cost to produce it? Well, let's suppose that you don't own a piece of ground and you need to go buy a piece. Would you like to learn how to buy a piece of ground? No money down, no interest, no carrying charges. Do you think you could make a real estate deal like that in America today? I've made many of them, and I've shown people how to do that, the no money down trick. So in school, we'll show you how to buy a piece of ground if you don't have it. If you've got a piece of ground, are you using it to its maximum potential? Have you thought about putting in a little operation to make that ground pay for itself? You know, if you're paying $500 a month payments on a piece of real estate and you're working someplace to make the $500, what happens if you lose your job? And we thought about that. That's why I mentioned in the last segment, I need a methodology whereby I can make a living outside the system. Now, if you're making a living and you work at Boeing or IBM or some place and you're making your living, that's fine. There's no problem with that. But why don't you think about, gee, what if I lost my job? Could I feed, clothe, and house myself? And could I produce a little extra for some people down the street? You know, back in the Depression here, people were really scrambling to make ends meet. When I was a kid during World War II, everybody had a victory garden. Everybody grew something. And what we didn't have, Mrs. Birchfield had. What Mrs. Birchfield didn't have, what Mrs. Johnson had. And those people, you know, when you have three or four pear trees, you're going to have more pears than you can eat. You take those surplus pears and trade it to somebody that's got apples. And the guy that's got apples, you're trading your squash for, you're trading cucumbers or something else. Now, people will drive 40 miles to buy organic produce. The Wadlet program, they thought that what you needed to do was to locate this farm or your store within 40 miles of a population area of 50,000 people. We discovered that you only need 100 customers and 12% of the population is interested in organic produce. Now, if you're living in an area that's producing a lot of organic produce already, then you've got competition. And what you need is 100 customers that will buy from you. So you go out and you get 5 customers. And then you go out and you get 5 more. Here's the trick. You know, people, it's kind of like this. Birds of a feather flock together. So if you came to me and you sold me on the idea of organic produce, I would tell 10 of my friends. Those 10 friends all have 10 friends who in turn have 10 friends who in turn have 10 friends. Now, the people that don't eat organic do not have 10 organic friends. I mean, it's just, that's the way life is. So you go over to some guy who's a Catholic and he's going to have 10 Catholic friends. You go to some guy who's a Republican, he's going to have 10 Republican friends. You go to some guy that buys his food down here at Walmart and he's going to have 10 friends that buy from Walmart. I mean, that's just where reality is at. Now, the store, as you progress along in your program, I mean, we start this thing at zero COD. We go out and we start looking for 5 customers. So you've got to go out and find 5 customers, but 5 customers have 10 friends, that's 50. Those 50 have 10 friends, that's 500. Now, you've got to be able to perform. So we need to teach you how, not only how to market it, but how to grow it. And there's a program here developed by Rodale called Companion Planting. Companion Planting. And we learned that from the Indians. You know, the Indians, they used to plant beans, corn, and squash on the same piece of ground. So we pay attention to Rodale, the Indians, and other organic growers, and especially Acres USA. And if we're going to get into the business, then we want to find out, well, how do the other guys do it? And by doing that, you don't have to reinvent the wheel. You know, there are other fellows that have already been out there doing this. There's other people out there that have organic seed. There's other people out there that have open pollinated seed. There's other people out there that are marketing and can show you how to do the same thing. And so birds of a feather flock together. So I buy organic, and I'm always looking for organic. Everybody that eats organic is always looking for organic. Well, who else has got this? Who else has got this product? So we put a store in, and in the store, we can start adding items, just like a health food store. What do you need for a store? You need an outbuilding. You need a garage. You need someplace on your property. Maybe you have to build one. Maybe you'll have to buy one, have it moved in. You know, these little metal buildings? It doesn't take very much money to buy one of these little metal buildings. And most of your business is going to be done in about 6 months, starting in March through about the end of November, and you're going to be just about completed. So you're only talking about working maybe 6-7 months a year. Not bad. $100,000 a year is what you're shooting for. And you can do that in about 36 months. So you don't quit your job in the morning and go out here and try to do this. What you do is you start doing this on the side, and you start off with 5 customers, and then you move up to 10, then from 10 to 20, and 20 to 40, 40 to 80. And in about 3 or 4 years, you can have 100 customers producing $100,000 a year on a piece of ground that you may not own today, but if you do own it, we could start producing on that ground right away next spring. And if your ground is not organic now, we can go to work on creating organic soil, creating an organic garden. How big a piece of ground do you need? How big is an acre? Well, you know, you can buy little tractors, the little small 25, 30 horsepower tractors like a Ford 8N or the old Alex Chalmers. You know, those tractors are around for $500 or $1,000. And then the old implements that go with them, you know, they're really dirt cheap. and they're dirt cheap because farming in America has failed. Everybody's gone into mass production. What they're trying to do now is go into monoculture. What we want to do is agriculture. We want to grow 40 different crops, 40 different things. And that's because the more variety that you have to sell, then the greater is the appeal when Mary Housewife wants to drive out here 10, 20, 30 miles to your store in your little farm. And it makes an experience for the family. And pretty soon, you'll put in a pond. And in that pond, you'll stock fish. And when you stock fish in the pond, then your customers come out and pay you a fee to catch the fish that you've stocked in the pond, which is another source of income. So the pond serves as irrigation, and it also serves as a cash cow. When mom and dad come out to pick raspberries, and the children go over to catch fish in the pond and then pay you to go fishing. These kinds of operations have been around for a long time. They're not brand new. In fact, we have one in this county. It's a trout farm in which you pay. They'll furnish you with the equipment that you need, the fishing pole and the bait and everything you want. And you just go out here and catch your fish, and you just pay for the fish as you catch them. Catch six fish, you're buying six fish. Now, that's called a you-pick operation because, you see, the owner is selling fish that you caught or you picked. So you do the same thing with raspberries, blackberries, so on. Now, let me give you a closer here. What do you think the most valuable crop is? Marijuana? No, it's raspberries at $43,000 an acre. Blackberries, $22,000 an acre. Blueberries, $8,000 an acre. Peaches, $8,000 an acre. Strawberries, $4,000 an acre. Soybeans, about $300 an acre. Why would we want to grow soybeans, wheat, and corn when there is so little in it? When we can be growing the vegetables and crops for little mom-and-pop customers that are going to be paying the retail price, and it's worth a dollar a square foot, $43,000 an acre. Now, that's what we're shooting for. All right, now, this class is also available on CD, as is all of our schools. They're on CD. I like to recommend that you come to school because if you can see, get your fingers in the dirt, and you can actually walk around and see how it's done. You know, it adds an awful lot to the program. If you can't, you can always come to school at a later date. You can take the program on CD, and you can come to school. Now, we also have another program here we've been involved in for many, many years, and it's very simple. Once you go to school here, if you want to come back and bone up next year or the year after, you can come back free. So once you've paid for the class, you can come back as many times as you want, catch up, own up on what's new. Remember the phone number, it's 417-273-4967. And we're online, georgegordon.net. Click onto the email machine, send me an email request. Stand by, and we'll be right back with the last school that we offer here called the Mosaic Law. Hang on.
So he's in Missouri, or was in Missouri?
Yes, Isabella, Missouri, down by Ava. He's in Ozark County.
Okay. So are they still there even though he's passed away or whatever?
If you call that number, I'm free. I will answer the phone.
Cool.
That class, that CD, though, is going to cost you, I think, about 4 or 5 gold coins. About 4 or 5 1 ounce gold coins. So, okay, my ghost just absolutely amazed me. I've made a point of peeing on a different pile of leaves every morning now, and by the time they go back in, those leaves are gone because they come and eat every leaf I pee on.
That's disgusting.
Yes, it is.
So the price of gold is about $1,225 right now.
No, so it's down by quite a bit, actually.
Oh, okay. Now it just went up to $1,226.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, I think half a year ago it was up to 1,800. So
now it just went down again to $1,225.69.
Right, you're watching the constant quote. Okay, that'll drive you crazy.
Yeah, I'm watching the market.
Just find the daily quote.
Silver is $17.85 an ounce.
Yeah, about 18 an ounce. Yep. Which is the reason right now I'd be willing to work for half an ounce of silver an hour.
Yeah, I'm willing to work for 1 ounce of silver an hour.
Yeah, well, you're willing to work for much less because, you know, like you're a truck driver. Well, you won't be for long, but I mean, you know.
Well, right now I'm working for less than 1 ounce of silver an hour.
Yeah. Well,
if I worked for 1 ounce, I'd get $1 an hour raise.
If, no, you'd get a lot more than that because you got to divide up the amount of time you're actually out there. Even though they say you have time off, you're only out there for the sake of driving.
Oh, yeah, I'm only counting my driving time. I'm not actually counting my extra 10 hours that I'm not driving and in my layovers that I don't get paid for.
Yeah. Yeah, all that. I mean, Bill counts all that. He's calculated that he makes between $2.50 to $5 an hour when he's out.
Oh, if you calculate it that way, I make about $8 an hour.
There you go. So you're making about a little bit less than half an ounce of silver an hour.
So, right.
Yep. Yipper, yipper.
But if I counted my actual work time, then I would still need an ounce of silver an hour.
Okay. There you go. How many days would you have to work in order to get 1 ounce of gold?
Well, 25. Divided by, we'll say 18, 68 hours, and at work, basically about a week.
About a week. I just discovered blackberries out in the middle of the field. Ow.
Oh, yeah, I could have done that in my head. Yeah, about a week.
About a week. There you go.
Yeah, if you want to make $1,200 a week. But you'd have to work 70 hours in order to get that $1,200. Most people aren't willing to work that. Most people only want to work 30 to 40 hours. After 40 hours a week, they're like, oh, man, I'm beat. I'm exhausted. I can't believe I work so much. And I'm like, you got to be kidding me.
Well, let's see now. When I was quote unquote still married and playing the game of Mr. Mom because my wife wasn't around. I was working 12 to 18 hours a day, 7 days a week, no days off, no vacations. I did that for, about 7 years total. But I did take a vacation after about the third year. So I was gone for about a week and had to come back early because things started to go haywire.
Haywire!
Yep. Anyway. So 12 hours a day would be 84 hours a week, minimum.
Yeah.
That was minimum. So, and I was taking care of my kids, getting them to school, feeding them, checking on their homework, teaching them stuff that the school didn't teach them, you know, making sure they had a proper education.
Education.
Oh yeah, not just indoctrination. Trying to teach them. I was trying to teach them reasoning skills. You know, it's like if somebody tells you the sky is green, and you look up and see a blue sky, what does that mean?
Right. It means the sky is purple.
means somebody screwed up in the head. Now, who is it?
You.
Yeah, possibly. Nah.
So we were talking about starting out with a small tractor, 25 horsepower or 35 horsepower.
Yeah, he's talking about an 8N.
That's going to cost you about $20,000.
No. We missed out on getting one for $1,000 with all the attachments.
Oh, yeah, I'm thinking brand new.
Make 8N's brand new, as far as I know.
Well, not those, but I mean, when I Googled 25, 35 horsepower tractors, I came up with $15,000 to $20,000 products.
Right. They're going to show you a brand new one. All right.
Right.
You need to go Craigslist and look at the used ones.
Yeah, I understand that. But a lot of people want to buy brand new. They don't want to buy used. But yeah, used, you can pick one up for probably about $5,000.
Well.
Yeah, we missed out on a good deal of $1,000, but those good deals aren't always around.
Stop going the wrong way, you stupid goat. That way.
But
why?
What I was going to suggest to start out is get a walk-behind tractor and graduate to a 25-horsepower tractor.
Come on. Get up.
What I was going to suggest is get a walk-behind tractor and then graduate to something bigger.
You're going the wrong way, you stupid goat. Hi. Hold on. I got a goat problem to take care of.
Yep.
She's getting a collar. Just as soon as I find a suitable collar to stick around her neck.
Which one is that?
It's Sidewinder.
That's what I thought you might be talking about.
Everybody else headed back home, and she didn't pick her head up fast enough. So now she's heading back to the Monsanto field.
Nice.
I just tripped her. She freaked out.
You what?
I tripped her and she freaked out.
PCSA 53 running the Kive hay baler. Adam Davis at the helm. It's the bale wrap cycle.
Why are you going the wrong way? Come on.
The bale begins in 1 minute. Actually, 50 seconds.
Dang, he is trying really hard to go the wrong way on purpose.
Okay, so if we get one of those miniature walk-behind hay balers, what do we cut the grass with? What do we cut the hay with?
The same thing with a sickle cutter on it.
Okay. Because we can go to P&S and collect our own hay with a walk-behind hay baler.
I hear you.
Do what?
I hear you.
Go around and we'll show you that. So before we get started, these are what the windrows look like after we're all over the field. Hey, Baylor, let's take you around the front and show you what it looks like. All right, this is our front view of the concrete, but it compresses towards the outside. When it's ready, this knob here, top rollers, it will begin to spin.
Whatever trimmings on the bottom, clothes, and then I go right back into my portion. What we're going to do first, of course, is start up the tractor.
To push the knob in to release it, and then turn it until it pops out at the various positions that you want.
Don't give me a flat tire, you silly goat.
Hey, why don't you mute your phone so I can monologue?
Do what?
Why don't you mute your phone so I can monologue?
All right, I'll try to do that.
Do not star six.
Do not star six.
All right. So, while David's putting a goat away, I will basically talk about walk-behind tractors. We've been looking at these for quite a while. I just haven't had the money to buy one yet. But miniature hay balers, that's one thing you want. If you got another piece of property to collect hay from. You don't have to really, like, grow anything special on that land if you don't want to. Basically, what you're looking for is just nutrients to put on your soil. I mean, if you have farm animals that you want to feed, then you can plant certain things that you want in their food. But for us, we'll just go, I got this other property that I bought into, it turned out to be a scam, but I'm still part owner in this stupid project. So I'm trying to figure out how to recoup some of my losses. And baling hay would be one way. But I don't really have the means to go do like big hay bales. So we've been looking at doing small hay bales. Small hay bales, I can transport all the stuff over there on a little trailer on the back of the pickup truck. And we can load all the hay bales in the back of the pickup truck and or on the trailer. And you can pick them up by hand, no big deal. So we got two pickup trucks, so we can take two trucks over there, have two trailers, one trailer for the tractor and whatnot, and the other trailer to haul the hay with, as well as in the back of the pickup trucks. So that's one of the things I'm looking into, is the miniature hay baler for that project. But yeah, you can get a small tractor, a walk-behind tractor to get you started. And then graduate, you know, up to a larger tractor. Because you just got to get started. That's the trick. That's the key, getting started. Once you get started, yeah, it might take a little while. I mean, we've been at it for about a little over a year for our project. And it's slow going, and it's frustrating sometimes. But, you know, as it gets going more and more and more, it'll start picking up velocity. You know, I forgot the word now. I had it just a second ago, but now I lost it. Momentum, that's the word. It'll start picking up momentum. You know, it's kind of like investing, you know, with compound interest. At first, it doesn't look like you're making any money. But after a little while of investing and compounding interest, it starts doubling and doubling and doubling, and then you're just like, whoa, I'm making money. Same way with any other project. You know, you just got to get started. And once you get going, the momentum, you know, will take care of itself. You just got to keep going. Like Brian Tracy said in one of his motivational tapes, one of the secrets to success is getting in line and staying in line. If you get out of line, you got to go back to the back of the line. Start all over. So you got to start and see it all the way to the end of the line. So get in line and stay in line. Don't give up. So that's part of it. I want to go back through this audio. This is a couple things I want to point on. So here we go.
Okay, we're back. Let's take a look at this thing of how to make $100,000 on 25 acres or less. Well, during the 1970s, an obscure black college professor at Tuskegee Institute in Alabama, working on a grant, by the way, that was a Rockefeller grant, if you can believe it, $250,000, he developed a unique marketing plan for agricultural products. Once they did this, the Rockefeller money dried up. Once they showed that, yeah, we could do this, this is not something that the New World Order wanted accomplished.
Right. Yeah, they don't want us to be successful, and it has nothing to do with them being black either.
Actually, it did.
Well, I'm sure.
They didn't want successful black people, let alone anybody successful.
Well, yeah, they don't want any of us to be successful unless we subscribe to their theology. I mean, Obama's not really black, but he's black enough to be black. And
he's Martian. He's not black, brown, or anything. He's Martian.
Well, anyway, you know, as long as he subscribes to their theology, they'll let him into their clique. But anybody who does not subscribe to their theology, you're an outcast, and they do not want you to be successful.
Of course not.
Red, yellow, black, or white.
That's why Cortez took away the ability of the natives to grow easy crops that fed the masses.
Right.
Namely, he took away their ability to grow amaranth, and there's a stigma against growing amaranth now. You know, ask any farmer, you point out an amaranth plant to them, and they go, oh, that's pigweed. We don't want that.
But it's a superfood.
Yeah.
Or superweed. Stick that in your pipe and smoke it.
The plan was aimed at poor rural black landowners in the South who own small acreages. Now, some of these acreages are as small as 3 acres. 3 acres. You can make $100,000 a year. I'll show you how. Now, the goal was to keep these landowners on the land by producing produce for sale to the public at retail and to generate an income that would support a family. Well, $100,000 a year gross will support a family. Now, the cost of production is about 50% of what you get out of a business enterprise. That's what we call a keystone markup. Keystone markup. You buy it for a dollar, you sell it for two. That's called a keystone. Now, in agriculture, you have a tremendous amount of input. You have chemicals and sprays, and you have labor. This operation is a four-man operation. It's a man, his wife, and two teenage children. It's a four-man operation. If you don't have two children that will work on the farm with you, then you're going to have to spend some money on labor. These are called you-pick operations, and you do as much as you can to create a you-pick operation where the customer picks the produce.
Now, that's similar to what I was talking about, having them go and pick the stuff, so we would have to grow it up front.
Oh, yeah.
So that it would be readily accessible. They drive in, they park, they go in, they pick their food, they pay you, or pay us for what they pick, and then they go home.
Yep. Weigh them in, weigh them out.
Okay. Kind of like on Karate Kid when he went to Okinawa.
Okinawa?
Yeah, anyway. I'm not sure on all the details, but that's the picture that came to my brain.
I'm not sure on any of the details other than wax on, wax off.
Wax on, wax off. I remember a lot of the details, but anyways.
The Watley program was so successful that it became known as the Watley program, how to make $100,000 a year on 25 acres or less. That guy's name was Booker T. Watley.
Booker T.
There are about 4,000 of these small family enterprises operating in the United States today.
So he's got over 4,000 enterprises currently, or currently as of the time of this video, audio, that are successful operations.
Is he talking about Watley, or is he talking about his own personal teaching?
He says there are over 4,000 enterprises. Hang on.
Customer picks the produce, and you put in a store. The Watley program was so successful that it became known as the Watley program, how to make $100,000 a year on 25 acres or less. That guy's name was Booker T. Watley. There are about 4,000 of these small family enterprises operating in the United States today.
4,000 farms.
Watley programmers.
Watley programmer farms operating in the U.S.
By the way, you might be surprised your local library may have the book available for you.
There you go. Well, check it out. On Amazon.
Yeah, well, that's a bit overpriced.
Yeah, but it's cheaper than 5 gold coins.
Yes, but you know George Gordon provides you some of the details you need in order to do it organically.
Do that.
I'm gonna mute myself. I gotta find the goats.
Okay.
Now, there are approximately 33.6 million people. About 12% of the population are into health food and organics. And that's spread all over the country. There's 12% of the population in North Dakota, and 12% of the population in New York, and 12% of the population in California. You can sell this produce wholesale to health food stores. But it's better if you sell your produce retail to your own customers. So,
yeah, I was talking about doing that too a few podcasts ago or whatever. We were talking about selling the food. It's like if you price your food the same as the local grocery store, you're making retail and you're giving the customer a better product than your local grocery store is giving them for the same price. So people are naturally going to want to come to you if you got something better for the same price. Now you got to do is say, bring the local ad and we'll match the price. No big deal. So you'll be able to get more than just organic farmers. I mean, not organic farmers. People who are looking for organic. You'll get other people that will consider organic as well. Because there's a lot of people that just don't really care. They're going for the best bang for their buck. And that's what they look at. Oh, well, what's cheaper? You know. Well, if you're giving them better quality for the same price, they may come to you. Because they're just looking for the best bang for their buck. They don't care if it's organic or not. But if they taste it, and, you know, once they taste it and they say, whoa, this is better than my stuff that I get at the grocery store, then you've got them sold. You know, you might have to be like a crack dealer and say, yeah, well, I'll give you the first one for free. You go, take this and compare it with what you get at the local grocery store. And if you like mine better, then you can come buy mine. You can do that too. You know, I give out samples all the time for my aromatherapy. I don't give out too many. I only give like 3 samples at max. And it depends on the type of the product because some of the stuff, you know, a sample is a couple hundred dollars, and I'm not going to give out a couple hundred dollar sample. But, you know, it depends on what it is. Tomatoes, you know, whatever, cucumbers. You know, whatever you think you can compete with the local market, you say, well, or whatever they buy at the local market, you say, well, what do you buy? And they say, well, I buy asparagus. Okay, well, I got asparagus. How about you take, I'll bring you some asparagus for free, and if you like it better than what you get at the store, then you can buy mine, or you can buy the store, whatever, but you know, whatever. Now, if they don't, if you don't do asparagus, say, well, what else do you, you know, go down the list. And surely you'll find something that they buy at the store that you produce, and yours is more than likely going to taste better and be healthier for them. They probably won't care about health, but most people care about taste.
True enough.
Huh?
True enough.
Right.
North Dakota and 12% of the population in New York and 12% of the population in California. You can sell this produce wholesale to health food stores, but it's better if you sell your produce retail to your own customers. And so what Watley developed was a retail marketing program where you go out and pre-sell the produce. You need 100 customers. You go to a health food store, you start talking to people who are into health foods. Would you like to contract with me to grow your food? For instance, right now, our family uses approximately 600 pounds of potatoes a year.
Okay, that's the other thing. You start growing what you need first, you know. Grow what you know you will use and what your friends will use. That's your first line of defense right there, your friends and family. Talk to your friends and family. Say, hey, I'm gonna start growing organic foods. Would you be interested? Start with your friends. They'll spread the message. But you first start growing what you and your friends and your family want.
Oh, yeah.
And then branch out from there. As you pick up more people, you can start growing more things and start making more money. Because you're not going to charge your friends and family a whole lot, but you're going to charge them enough to help you get going. And they're going to want to see you get going because they love and care about you. Well, most of them. some people just, they don't want to, some people don't want you to be more successful than they are. And so then they want to see you fail only because they don't want to look bad, so they don't want you to look good. But those aren't
such a person is not really your friend.
Right, but then you got family that's like that too.
Oh, you know?
I do. I know I do.
The conclusion that family that's like that is not really family.
True that. Most of your friends are more family than your family.
Yeah.
Blood is not thicker than water.
And I would like to buy 600 pounds of potatoes a year from somebody that grows organic potatoes. I don't want to buy Monsanto New Leaf Superior potatoes that are BT and Roundup ready.
What is BT?
BitTorrent? I don't know.
BT and Roundup ready.
Biotechnology, BT.
BT toxin. Okay, yeah, probably biotechnology.
Yeah, but,
nope.
You know, look it up.
Baculus stirring. I can't pronounce it.
Right. You need to put in the full phrase you said. Because like I said, what's BT? BitTorrent. I mean, you know, if you're a computer tech, you know, BT is BitTorrent. But if you're a potato grower, it's going to be something else.
Yeah, I can't pronounce it, but let's have the computer program pronounce it. See how it pronounces it. Computer program. Oh, what? Where the heck am I? That's not where I want to be. There we go. Okay, here it is.
Bacillus thuringiensis.
Yeah, I think you said the same thing, didn't you?
Pretty well.
Bacillus thuringiensis.
Bacillus thuringiensis.
Yeah, I don't think it.
I clicked it too fast.
And
do what?
And you blew it up.
Yeah.
Bacillus thuringiensis.
Okay.
Yeah,
BT,
I don't think it's
ready.
Yeah, I don't believe that it's pronouncing it right.
Okay. Bacillus. That one's probably right.
Yeah.
The other one spelled thuringiensis. I-E-N-S-I-S.
Yeah, I do horrible listening to people spell things out to me. You'd have to say it insanely slow before I could even begin to catch it.
Thuringiensis. Thuringiensis. Thuringiensis.
So that's, it's a bacteria.
Yeah, T-H-U-R. Thor, I-N-G, thoring, thuring, I-E-N, S-I-S.
So is this some sort of bacteria that they crossed with the potato?
That's a good question. Let's Google that.
Yeah. Ding dong diddly.
Ding dong diddly doodah. All right. Ben says these.
Bacillus thuringiensis. Bacillus thuringiensis is a gram-positive, soil-dwelling bacterium, commonly used as a biological pesticide. B. pyrimiensis also occurs naturally in the gut of caterpillars of various types of moths and butterflies, as well on leaf surfaces, aquatic environments, animal feces, insect-rich environments, and flour mills and grain storage facilities.
Okay, so BT-ready potatoes are potatoes ready to receive that as a pest control.
Right, but it says it can be found, this natural bacteria can be found in insect-rich environments.
Yeah. In the gut and paws and such.
That means it doesn't actually repel insects.
Well, it doesn't repel those particular insects. Or it could be that those insects cause certain plants to die out. I don't know. I don't know what it's all about. I mean, you know, part of having a plant being successful is get rid of all the competitors.
Right.
So.
Bacillus thuringiensis. Bacillus thuringiensis is a gram-positive, soil-dwelling bacterium, commonly used as a biological pesticide. B. thuringiensis also occurs naturally in the gut of caterpillars of various types of moths and butterflies, as well on leaf surfaces, aquatic environments, animal feces, insect-rich environments, and flour mills and grain storage facilities.
Okay, so that's what that is.
Fair enough. Yeah, we don't know what all that means.
Yeah. We use approximately 600 pounds of potatoes a year. And I would like to buy 600 pounds of potatoes a year from somebody that grows organic potatoes. I don't want to buy Monsanto New Leaf Superior potatoes that are PT and Roundup ready. I don't want to buy that. That's what they sell in the supermarket. You know, if you had potatoes, well, let me put it this way, if you had any kind of produce, fruits, vegetables, meat, et cetera, I would buy it from you in a heartbeat. Let me ask you the same question. Would you pay retail for organic produce?
Yes! Another thing, too, is the food in the grocery store is pre-picked. And then it's got, of course, chemicals. We already know that. And then it's got a synthetic wax to go around it to protect it.
Yeah.
So when you clean the chemicals and the synthetic wax off of the product before you eat it, you're removing a lot of plastic from the skin of the...
But you're not removing the stuff that's soaked down deep into the plant.
Right. If the poison that they put on it and the wax that they put on it didn't already destroy the vitamin B, you're washing off the vitamin B because you're trying to wash off the chemicals and the poisons and the wax. And if you don't, then you're going to get the chemicals, the poisons, and the wax, along with the vitamin B, which is kind of mute. So either way, it's mute. But if you go out to an organic, if you're growing it or you're picking it, one and a half dozen another, if you go to the field, you pick it, you're picking it ripe because you're going to pick it the same color as you would pick it at the grocery store, except that the grocery store is picked 2, 3, 4 weeks ahead of time.
Oh, yeah.
Now you're picking it same day, just like it would look in a grocery store, if not better, and it'll taste better.
Well, vine ripened is always better than shelf ripened.
Right. And then you don't got to necessarily, well, you probably don't have to wash it at all, but most people will anyways. We wouldn't, but, well, we might wipe it off, but even if you do wash it, you don't have to scrub it because you don't have to worry about the chemicals. So you're going to retain the vitamin B that's in the skin because the vitamin B is typically in the skins of most fruits and vegetables. So the
If it looks clean, I'll eat it as is. If it doesn't look clean, I'll get a rinse.
Right. So most people are vitamin B deficient because they're buying store-bought food that has all these chemicals and synthetic wax on it, and then they got to scrub it to clean all that crap off, so they have no vitamin B.
Yep. But I stick a bunch of berries, I might throw them a little bit of salt water in order to, a mild solution of salt, in order to make all the bugs get off of them. You know, but other than that.
Right. I mean, like eggs. How long are eggs good for?
Well, it depends. I've talked to people who store their eggs without refrigeration, untreated, for 6 months. And they're still as good as store fresh eggs that, you know, were laid 2 or 3 days ago.
Supposedly laid 2 or 3 days ago.
This is true. Every once in a while there's a warehouse where they find some eggs that are about 3 or 4 years old and they ship them out to the stores. You know?
That's
disgusting.
Yep.
Especially since, well, here's the trick, all right? You want to buy unwashed eggs. That's what you want to buy. Or at least that's what you should want to buy. All right? The average American hasn't seen an unwashed egg. They'd be grossed out if they saw some chicken poop on the egg.
Yeah.
If you wash that egg, they'd be grossed out if they even knew that chicken poop might have been on their egg. All right? But if you wash that egg, there's a protective skin on those eggs that will keep them for a long time.
Right.
As long as that skin's there. All right? So you can literally take all of your eggs and put them in a bed of sand and store them long-term in your root cellar. All right? Now, on my mom's farm, I stuck them in the refrigerator, but I didn't wash them. I stuck them in the refrigerator, okay? And at one point, we had eggs 9 months old. All right? And my mom complained because I shut the light off in the chicken coop. She wanted the chickens to lay eggs, 24/7, 365. All right? Well, she had all these refrigerators anyway. So I just collected the eggs. And we ate what we ate, and the rest of them I dated and stuck in the refrigerator. And, middle of winter, chickens hadn't been laying eggs for months, and we're still eating eggs, and it's like my mom's kind of curious, well, what's going on? How come we're still eating eggs, even though you're not collecting any? It's like, oh, well, I've been packing more in the refrigerator. She couldn't believe that they were 9 months old. I showed her the dates. When you crack the egg and the yolk still stands up firm and the whites aren't terribly runny, they still, have that gelatinous clinginess to them of a fresh egg. And that kind of says it all. Whereas if she bought farm fresh eggs from the store, half the time the yolks would break on you.
Yeah.
And the whites, just ran over the whole pan as if there were water, And those are supposedly fresh. And
you can't keep them for very long, otherwise they go bad.
Yeah, and worse, the yolks were practically white themselves, whereas, I reduced the amount of grain I was feeding them. That's another problem she had. She didn't like the fact that I wasn't feeding them as much, but they ate all the insects. We didn't have any insect problem.
But yeah, there was something else they were talking about with the pigs. They said don't overfeed your animals, and they were specifically pigs, because they'll gain too much weight and they'll grow too fast. So you don't need to feed them very much. Most people overfeed their animals. Same thing with fish. If you overfeed a fish, you'll kill it. You don't want to overfeed them. You want to feed them just what you need to feed them. Like
well,
a cat.
With
feed
fish,
them.
It's with fish. I believe it's another story.
Sure.
With fish, you overfeed them. Even if they'll eat it, they still poop it out. So every bit of stuff you put into their tank is in their tank.
Yeah.
All right.
But yeah, if you feed them too much, it'll make them sick and they'll die.
Yeah.
Because, yeah, there's too much feces.
Yeah. So, yeah, same thing with turtles. I had turtles. The basic instructions I received was for how to grow your turtles quickly. Well, if your turtles were the size that you wanted them to be, you don't need to feed them very much. You know?
Right.
And
like, we feed them what? We feed them in the morning, and we let them hunt the rest of the day for their food. Now, in the summer, that's no problem because there's tons of bugs. They're huge bug eaters. But in the winter, it's a little more scarce, so we feed them a little more in the winter.
You know about the cats or the chickens we don't have anymore?
Cats.
Yeah.
Cats. And
yeah,
that would go for the chickens as well.
Yeah, in the wintertime I fed chickens because there just wasn't anything out there for them to eat. Now, on our farm, actually, there's lots for them to eat even now. You know?
Right. Because they scratch, and they don't just eat bugs. They eat other things, too. They eat grain. Oh, they beat them grain. They'll scratch the grain.
This time they eat green leafy stuff.
Right. And it's been a mild winter, so I'm sure there's bugs around for them to eat.
You're already paying retail for chemically produced produce in your supermarket, so if somebody would come to you and say, I've got organic potato, meat, milk, butter, and eggs, would you buy that from me and just pay me the same price you're now paying down at the local retail store? Would you do that? Well, most people would.
That's another thing we was talking about the other day. You don't want to sell too much food off of your land because you're depleting your soil, unless you're putting nutrients back into your soil and not like chemical farmers do. They only add like what? 6 ingredients. You want to add all, or 6 minerals. You want to add all 90 minerals.
Well, you tell your customers, for every grocery bag of vegetables you take off this land, we want you to bring a 5-gallon bucket of poo.
Yeah. Well, the other way to get around that, too, is you can, like we were talking about earlier, about hay. You can bring hay onto your land from another piece of property, even though you're depriving that land of nutrients. And not really, because there's three ways that you can put nutrients back in the soil. Four ways if you count poop. So you got poo, whether it's your poo, your animal's poo, or you bring in poo from the community. Then there is your weeds. Weeds burrow down several feet into the earth, if not meters, if not miles, into the earth, and they bring nutrients up from deep, deep, deep down into the earth. Then you have mushrooms. Mushrooms do the same thing, except they don't do it deep, they do it wide. And so mushrooms are transporting nutrients from all around you.
And according to Stamets, I wish I could remember his full name. I'm trying to remember the name of his book. But he claims that they not only do it, you know, vertically, you know, do it wide, they do it intelligently. That the mushrooms, the mycelium, actually use the same chemicals that we use in our brain to communicate with the roots of the plants around them.
to find out what the plant wants. And it'll reach out and get that from some other location that's in contact with and literally pump it, you know, up to a mile from one location over to a tree that needs it, just so I can get a little starch from the tree.
Right. So you don't really want to plow your field too much, because you destroy that nutrition highway.
You destroy your lamb's brain.
Be a McCoidal. So, yeah, you have weeds that are burrowing down deep and collecting nutrients and bringing it back up to the earth surface. Then you have the mushrooms that are collecting nutrients far and wide. And then you have you. You can collect nutrients from far and wide, whether it's bringing in hay, bringing in poo, or other biodegradable materials to put on the land, compost, whatnot. So that's three nutrition highways that you have to take advantage of for your land.
Well, I think Ian told me this. One big round bale of hay. You buy one of those that's 2 or 3 years old. It's no longer really good for animals. You know, it's questionable at that point, but still full of nutrients. And it has enough nutrients in it that it's worth, you know, $60 to $180 worth of the six main chemicals that they spray on the garden, on farms, right?
It's probably got a lot more nutrients than that.
Well, yeah. Plus, it's got all the ones that they don't bother pricing because they don't think they're important. But they're there. So, $15 and you got 10 times that in fertilizer.
Well, either they don't put it in there because they don't think it's important, or they don't put it in there because it's too expensive to put it in there.
Well, they're looking for results. And the six give them the growth results that they're looking for. They don't care about taste. They don't really care about nutritional value.
Right.
They really care that they're getting the maximum amount of profit out of the people they're selling it to.
Right. They're looking at the bottom line.
But they're looking at the wrong bottom line. I look at the bottom line, too.
True that.
Are you going to be healthier after I've dealt with you?
Well, yeah,
you're
going to
be healthier after I've dealt with you? Great. I succeeded. I'm happy.
Well, yeah, we want to make a profit, too, but we don't want to do it at your expense, if you will.
We want to do it at your benefit.
Exactly. And there's other things you can do, too. Like what we're going to do is we're going to be splitting wood on our land. All of that excess wood chipping and stuff that we don't sell is going to go back into the soil. You know, we'll bring trees in from outside our property, cut them, split them right there on the property, and all the excess will basically be part of our compost, part of our soil improvement program. We bring in cardboard. We allow other people to bring in yard waste. You know, you can collect yard waste. What I used to do when I lived in the city, people would always rake up their leaves in the fall and put them out on the curb. Every time I drive by, I'd be like, hey, you want them leaves? No. Can I take them? Yeah. Boom, throwing them back in the pickup truck. I was on my way to and fro. I didn't go out of my way. I just stopped and picked up leaf bags. One time, the kids, they had a blast. We went to my ex-mother-in-law's, and they were raking up their leaves to put them out to the trash. So we picked them all up and shoveled them into the back of the pickup truck. Of course, I have a camper shell, right? So this camper shell pickup truck full of leaves. And the kids just had a blast. They jumped in the leaves and played in the leaves while I was driving down the road the cops couldn't see him playing in the leaves in the back of the truck because there was too many leaves in the back of the truck, plus the windows were tinted. So they had a blast going from grandma's to our place, playing in the leaves in the back of the pickup truck.
Yeah.
It was funny. And then we lived in a dead end. We lived in a dead end, and all the leaves in the neighborhood blew into the carport and would break down over the winter and then feed our backyard because the backyard flowed downhill from the carport. So our backyard was perfect for gardening. That's what we used it for, gardening. But yeah, there's all kinds of ways, especially in the city. There's people wanting to get rid of stuff all the time. You drive down the road, you see people sticks on the curb. You know, a tree falls down. You go and get that tree, go chop it up, whatever. Do whatever you got to do.
Around here, the fall pastime is rake it all up into the ditch and burn it right there in the city.
Yeah. But, I mean, you know, you could do your hula cultures, too, in the city, easy and for free, because there's all people are always putting wood out on the curb when a tree branch falls off the tree or they have to cut a tree down or something. Driving home from work, you'll see wood in the front yard. It says, free! People are giving it away in the cities. You stop, pick it up, take it home. Bam, you got your hula culture. Cover it up with dirt and poo.
Give it away now.
Give it away now. That's it. So, yeah, I mean, you can be very successful in a city. Probably quicker than you can in a country. Who knows?
Now, the average housewife is spending about $5,000 a year in the supermarket.
But then again, in the city, you got to worry about other things. Like, you can't eat the mushrooms, but you got to worry about...
Rules, regulations, standards, and guidelines.
That too, yeah, rules, regulations, standards, codes, and guidelines.
All right, we don't mind if you grow lettuce in your front yard, but you got to mow it down to 3 inches and no higher.
Yeah, that's where a privacy fence comes in. Yeah, it depends on where you live. Because in Independence, where we lived, we had an Asian family just down the street from us. Oh, my goodness. Their entire yard was nothing but food. I was so jealous. But the city never came down on them. If they did, the Asians told them where to go and how to get there. Right. But they inspired the rest of the neighborhood. You know, I was already starting it, but they inspired other people to do it, and they inspired my ex and the kids to kind of be a little more on board. And so we started being more productive, too, thanks to them.
There you go. So
not only can you help yourself, you'll be an inspiration to your community, just like that one guy in L.A., they call him the gangster gardener. I just found out about him like last week.
Oh, yeah. Darn it. I downloaded that video, too.
It's on the website.
I remember his name off the top of my head.
You can go to the DavidDavidAndDavid.com website. Click on or hover over farm. Oh, no, I didn't put it there. I put it under, hover over community, go to the drop-down menu to outreach, and then scroll over to free food and medicine. I put the video there because he's basically doing somewhat what I want to do with my free food and medicine outreach program. I want to teach the homeless and the less fortunate how to forage for their own food and medicine, whether in the city or in the wild. Well, either in the concrete jungle or in the woods, you know, be able to fend for themselves and do what this guy's doing, gangster gardening, taking over these vacant lots that the city doesn't give two hoots about until you start growing food in it. Then they care. But, you know, what are they going to do to the homeless? You know, the homeless ain't got nothing to lose. So teach the homeless how to feed themselves. Bam, they'll take over these vacant lots and start growing food.
Actually, what they'll do is they'll take away the food from the...
Well, that's when you get down there with a video camera and say, the government's taking the homeless food away from them.
Yep.
Then that put a stop to that. You know, expose these people for who they are. You know?
Ron Finley!
Yeah, the thing that the communists fear most is exposure. We have to expose them for who they are. So, yeah, go to daviddavidanddavid.com, hover over community, go down to outreach, and then click on free food and medicine. I got the video there. I haven't put my blurb yet as far as what I want to do with my outreach program yet, but I have a link to my freefoodandmedicine.org social network that nobody is a part of except for me.
Yeah.
Then you can go to freefoodandmedicine.net, check out Marcus Rothkrantz. I want to use his book, Free Food and Medicine book, for my project. So, anyway, enough of that. Let's go back to the audio.
All you want from her is $1,000. You want 20% of her food budget being spent with you on your little farm. And so what they derived, or what they created, was a little farm. You divide the thing up, and you plant just what other people want to buy, what your customers want to buy. So when 100 of your customers, and this is about all you can service, is about 100 people, at about $1,000 each, with you, your wife, and your two children.
So basically, you can do 1 acre per person. Each person can earn up to, well, or approximately $25,000 a year per acre. That's the formula that I came up with using his formula.
Yeah.
But he said you can make $100,000 on 3 acres. So you can make more than that, but that's probably about average, is $25,000.
Some of the ways he supplements it is you buy organic stuff from somebody else.
Right, and he talks about that too, stocking your store with organics that you don't produce. And another thing we're going to do too for our land project, so that we don't deplete our soil too much and to supplement our income, is we're going to have an after-hours lumber, because everybody in our town and the towns near us, they close up shop. They roll up the streets at 4, 5, 6 o'clock, and then they're not open on the weekend.
Yeah.
What if you need something? What if you need building material after 5 o'clock or on the weekend?
Well, I mean, you know, nobody's crazy enough to do that. I mean.
So you got to go to Timbuktu in order to get it. Yeah, well, the nearest big city is a good 45 minutes away that might have it, you know, or that would pretty much have it. Bolivar's 30, 45 minutes away. Nevada's 30, 45 minutes away, depending on how you go and how you drive. If David Ray's driving, it'll be about 45 minutes. Maybe an hour.
That's because it's like running into deer.
Yeah, so there's other things you can do to supplement the income. Like, we're also going to be doing aromatherapy, because I do aromatherapy, but not everybody in our area is going to buy aromatherapy. But I do know that the Amish will buy essential oils in bulk. So they will be probably my best essential oil customers.
When you put this little operation together, you're growing just what these people want to buy. You ask, well, how many potatoes do you buy? Well, I buy about 10 pounds a week. Well, that's about 500 pounds a year, 10 pounds a week. Now, 100 pounds of potatoes, if you sold those potatoes at 10 cents a pound, they'd be about $10 a hundred, or about $60 or $70 for a year's supply of potatoes. And customers come to your store. Now, here was a neat little operation that I've seen in some of these other, well, a lot of these little mom-and-pop operations. you don't have to grow everything there on your own farm. For instance, if you're up in North Dakota, you may not have peaches, but you know there are organic peach producers.
Millions of peaches, peaches for me. Millions of peaches, peaches for free. Peaches come in a can. They were put there by a man in a factory downtown.
All over. So what you do is you buy peaches from organic sources. And there's a lot of organic sources that you can find in Acres USA. Acres USA. People that have organic corn, wheat.
Organic Acres USA, is that what he said?
Acres USA is the name of the magazine.
Oh, Acres USA.
Yep.
Hang on, I gotta play this song.
Oh. Freaking me out, man. For me.
Yeah, then these ninjas show up at the end, and they beat them up and run them off, because I guess they're trying to steal their peaches or something.
Peaches for free.
Meat, bean, fruit, vegetables. And what you don't have, you can buy, and you can buy these at different times of the year. For instance, if you're in North Dakota, you may not have carrots, but they'll have carrots in January in the Rio Grande Valley and in Salinas, California.
Or maybe you're growing these things and they don't grow, so you got to emergency get some in.
Yeah.
What you do is you ship them in.
Or you don't grow enough.
But you have to make sure that you're buying organic and that you're selling organic.
Yeah, and you can also do heirloom as well.
Yeah.
Now, health food are basically in the business of selling pills. You ever notice that? One of your local health food store, they've got some beans and they've got a few things in there, but they don't have fresh fruits. Vegetables, which is what customers want to buy, and that's where the UPIC operation comes in.
Yeah, I never realized that until you just said it. Most health stores don't sell food.
Well, some do.
Right.
Nature's Pantry did. But
most health food stores are really more like herb shops. They're not really food shops.
When you walk into Nature's Pantry, if you came in through the center door, there's about five rows of vitamin supplements.
Oh, yeah.
Right in front of you. Now, off to the right was fresh vegetables, and then off to the left was actually soaps and cosmetics, and then beyond that was the freezers, the frozen goods, and then there was all the boxed goods beyond that.
Now, right, back those are real health food stores.
Yeah. That was Nature's Pantry. That's for anybody that is listening to this and are kind of in the area, Nature's Pantry is, I believe, in Independence, or is it actually in Blue Springs?
They're not there anymore, but they were in. I don't know. That's a good question. They weren't Blue Springs. They were somewhere between Independence and Lee Summit.
Right. Now, in Springfield, there's a place called Mama Jean's.
Yeah.
Apparently, it's so successful, it split up, and it's now three stores in Springfield. And I have yet to set foot inside. All I have is the rumor that they charge too much for stuff.
Most of them do, really.
Yeah.
I mean, what's the big one? Wild Oats?
Wild Oats? I don't know.
I don't remember. Anyway, there's a couple big mainstream ones, and they're really expensive, but people go there and people buy it, you know? So you can sell your stuff cheaper. Same quality, if not better quality, because you don't got to pick it early. So there you go, for cheaper prices.
Yeah.
And you can have the herbs and whatnot in your store, you know. So you can be a health food store. I think he says that here in a minute. You can be a real health food store and sell herbs, minerals, and vitamins on the side. And that could be your other source of income.
So here at the farm, we have...
But I wouldn't sell anything you don't know you can't sell. You know, like what we're going to sell on the land is either things that we will use if we don't sell them, or things that we know the customers want, or things that have an unlimited shelf life, like aromatherapy. Most essential oils have an unlimited shelf life. Only a few of them actually have a shelf life.
Raised beds that we've put together, and so that I can demonstrate and I can show you how to put a $100,000 farm together. For instance, let me give you an illustration of the value of a bet. Let's suppose that we take a bet, a raised bet, 6.5 feet wide by 60 feet long. And you've got about 400 square feet there, 6 by 60. And that little half foot in here is about 400 square feet. And you practice what we call square foot gardening, which was developed by Rodale. Now, there are a lot of organic sources. There are a lot of organic books out there, whether you're into organic or not. But if you plant garlic or lettuce, cabbage, that cabbage sells for about 50 cents a pound in the store. A head of cabbage is about 3 pounds. And let's suppose that we can sell that cabbage for 50 cents a pound, or let's get 33 cents a pound for it. A 3 pound head of lettuce is worth $1. And there's 400 square feet in a bed, and it will grow just about 400 cabbages. That's $400. Now think about that in terms of an acre. An acre has 43,560 square feet in it. Now let's talk about 3 acres, because 43,560 square feet, now take out your house and your buildings, and you plant your 3 acres in truck crop like cauliflower, cabbage, rutabaga, berries, fruit, and you're shooting for more a square foot. That's why 3 acres will produce $100,000 a year. So if you've just got a little place and you've got 2 or 3 acres on there, you know you can make your living. In fact, if you've got a place in the city, I've mentioned this a time or two, just 50 by 100 square feet, that's a lot, just a lot, 50 by 100 in the city. You can grow 2,000 square feet of vegetables on your own property. Think of that. That's 2,000 square feet will feed a family of 6 year-round.
Now, what did that family in California have, about 4,000 square feet?
Something like that, about a tenth of an acre.
Yeah, I think it was about 4,000 square feet. They were producing enough food for 4, and they made $25,000 a year on top of that.
And had animals on that.
Oh, yeah, they had animals, too. Which, yeah, there's a lot of cities that have a lot of rules about animals. I don't think we could have had goats in Independence. I think they allowed us to have chickens. I'm not sure what all they allowed. But
he probably can get here.
Independence has certain rules about certain animals. But, yeah, they had animals, too. They produced their own eggs. They had chickens. They had goose. They have ducks. And they had goats in California. Oh, Pasadena, California.
Right. So it's probably totally illegal because Pasadena is a pretty major city in California. I live in Vallejo, and Vallejo had rules and regulations against anything that was considered livestock.
Right. I think that's why they called them pet organic composting machines.
Right.
They're not livestock. They're pet. You know, that might be a loophole.
Yeah.
There you go. Pet organic composting.
Well, I didn't care whether it was a pet or what. If it had hooves, it was livestock, and they'd go after you.
Well, what about people who have pet pigs?
They went after, I bought, basically the house I bought, the convincing factor is I met the neighbor in the back and she had a potbelly pig. What I didn't know is the city was taking action against her even when I met her. And they eventually took her property away from her and kicked her out.
That's messed up.
Yep.
Yeah, see, the whole community should have came together and fought the city, but the...
Well, it is the community who turned her in.
Right. It's kind of like when I was taking care of Pepper Girl's house. I parked the big, parked the bobtail in the driveway. And I was only there once or twice a month, maybe three times tops. And the neighbor in the community turned me in for parking my bobtail in the driveway, and the cops came and ran me off. And I was there taking care of the property, you know, so that the house wasn't running down their property value. But they don't care about that. So I had to park a mile, about a half a mile away and walk. I parked a little closer because the cops said I could park there. But then the people that owned that parking lot told me I couldn't park there. So then I had to park about a half mile away at the hospital. This is the closest place I could park. And I walked. So maybe it wasn't quite a half mile, somewhere between a quarter and a half. But it was quite a ways. I don't know how far it was. I didn't measure it. It's quite a way. So it was about 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, about 6 to 8 blocks, however long that is. So, yeah, we need to come together as a community and quit turning each other into the New World Order.
Well...
Square feet is about what you need to feed a family of six. The Watley people did a great job, but those people didn't care whether you used organic or whether you practiced chemical farming. So we took the chemical farming out of the Watley program, and we added the 15 agricultural laws. Now, God gave us 15 laws. And told us, you practice these 15 laws, and you can have sustainable agriculture forever.
Okay, where are those 15 laws in the Bible?
Yeah, he pieced them together.
Okay.
So we would have to piece them together also.
What about the land Sabbath?
That's one of them.
Are you familiar with the land Sabbath?
Yeah, that's one of them.
So tell us about it.
Well, you let the land rest every seventh year. You don't harvest anything off of it. You don't trim anything. You just let it go feral for a year.
Oh, okay. So the land Sabbath is every 7 years, not every 7 days.
Every 7 years, yeah. You let the land completely rest.
That makes sense. I think I've heard that before, but I forgot about it.
He even suggested in one of his podcasts, you don't have to wait 7 years. You could do a land Sabbath every other year if you wanted to.
Right.
Then the land would rest even better.
Well, yeah, and you can rotate land. You know, if you have more land, like he said, you could, if you had like 25 acres or like we have 15, but we have... about 7 to 10 of it that's farmable, if you will. We can use half of it for 6 years, let it rest, you know, for 6 years, and use the other half.
Well, to be honest, ideally, you want everybody to do a land Sabbath at the same time. Because that controls pests.
Right.
If you're all doing it at the same time, then the pests have no place to go.
Okay, I see what you're saying.
You know, but since we got Mr. Monsanto just south of us, and... it might take some convincing to, get Glenn and Jeff and whoever's right across from us and whoever's, you know, whatever, within a mile of us, might be hard to convince all those people to do it. So in the meantime, we just do a land Sabbath whenever.
And we just focus on selling the other stuff that we don't produce on the land.
Yeah.
We might still split wood and we might still feed the land, but we won't harvest it.
Right. And we might do, like you're talking about, you know, land Sabbath half of it, and then the other half some other time.
Well, that's like tree farmers, professional tree farmers. They will plant in one area, and they'll let it grow. They won't touch it except for, you know, tree trimming and whatnot. But they'll let the trees grow. But they'll start 1 year on one piece of property. Then they'll move to the next property right next to it and plant there the next year. And then they'll move to the next property the next year and plant there the next year and just keep moving down the row. And they'll maintain all of it until it gets to a certain level. And then they'll chop it and start over. But they'll only chop one. They won't chop them all. They'll chop the first one. And then they'll plant that year. Then they'll move to the next one, chop that the next year, and then plant that year.
Chop, so chop, plant.
So they're rotating their crops, and they're rotating everything so that the land is always successful. That's what a true lumber farmer would do. You know, a successful, health-minded lumber farmer. They're not just going to go in and clear out all the trees and say, have a nice day. No, they're going to strategically plant and cut so that they always have lumber. And the lumber's always healthy, and they're going to take care of it. So, yeah, maybe every other year you pick half of the land to grow on. So one year you grow on this side, the other year you grow on this side, you let the land replenish itself the second year.
Right.
We can do that too.
Yep, yep.
And of course the question arises, is agriculture a chemical soup or is it a living organism?
Living!
And when you go to public school, they teach evolution, and you came from a living soup. And, of course, farming today is little more than chemical farming. It's like hydroponics. All we're going to do is feed the plant chemicals. And, indeed, they will grow. And they will produce. You can grow hydroponic tomatoes.
Hydro!
Wallpaper paste. And
yeah. Wallpaper paste tomatoes. I like that. Yeah, see, so if you grow potatoes or tomatoes and you donate one of your potatoes or tomatoes to somebody and say, hey, compare this to the wallpaper paste that you're buying at the grocery store. Tell me which one you like better.
Yeah, I've given up on buying any fruit and vegetable. Well, I buy vegetables once in a while. But I've given up on buying fruit from woods.
You got to do what you got to do. I mean, buying produce from the grocery store is better than not having it at all.
Yeah, but the fruit that I bought there, every time I buy fruit from woods, I end up spitting it out and throwing it away.
Well, yeah, I used to buy fruit all the time at the Lowe's truck stop because they had that 2-for-5 special. But then they shrink their container size so that it makes it less worth it. But then the fruit that I've been buying, I love watermelon. So I bought 2-for-5 watermelon the other day, the fruit cups. One of the cups tasted horrible. I pretty much didn't eat it. So that was a waste of money. And the other one was okay, so I ate most of it, but even that wasn't all that good. So when I got to the next truck stop that I stayed the night at, I took the remains went out to the edge of the woods and dumped them there with the seed, hoping that they will grow. But yeah, like he said, wallpaper paste, or like you said, they have no flavor, or they're disgusting. You can't.
Yeah,
the food in the grocery stores are just becoming like they said in that one audio that we had on the last podcast, flavored cardboard, and don't forget the high fructose corn syrup.
I don't know. A couple of years ago, I bought a watermelon at Woods and cut it open. And it had oil in it. It tasted horrible.
That was pesticide.
Yeah, but it was on the inside. There's oil on the inside. I mean, you can see it floating on the water.
Right. That was probably the GMO pesticide that the plant was designed to create.
Yeah. Well, I don't know, but, I mean, there it was. And it tasted horrible. It was seedless in the first place. I don't like seedless anything.
Right.
You know, I want to chew on my seeds. I want to eat them. You know?
Right.
You know, give me a watermelon. I will chew on the watermelon seeds.
But yeah, that wasn't our last podcast. It was our podcast before the last podcast. Or the podcast before the last podcast before the last podcast.
Yeah, whatever. I'm actually starting to get tired. Are we near the end of this?
We are halfway through.
We are halfway through. We don't really have time to do the whole thing, to be honest.
Well, we'll try and hurry.
We're at 2 hours and 17 minutes now, just to let you know.
Okay, yeah, just go back and listen to the podcast about GMO. You'll hear in the beginning I'm saying GMO, GMO, GMO is the way to go. That's the podcast you want to listen to.
Even though you don't want to go GMO, you know, that is the podcast you want to listen to.
Yeah. Okay, here we go.
They don't have any nutrients in them, but they are tomatoes, and people sell them. Now, why don't we grow on an organic living organism called soil, because it contains 186,000 organisms in the soil, and if all of those organisms are in there in balance, you won't have any insect problems at all, because insects only eat weak, sick plants.
Now, is that true? They only eat weak, sick plants? I've never heard that before.
Well, he said it enough times. You know, you tell a lie often enough, and the people believe it. So if he's lying, he's told it often enough that I kind of believe it.
Okay.
You know, generally speaking, if your plants are really healthy, the insects generally leave it alone.
Okay, I guess that's a practical application thing. You know, we'll all just have to put that one to practice and see if it really works.
Well, yeah, I mean, the healthier we get the soil, we have to see if there's more or less insects bothering the plants.
Not only that, but if you have a good compost, the insects are going to want to go there.
Yeah, it's already been demonstrated that if you have a good organic mat in your soil, you'll never see an ant. They'll be there. You'll just never see them.
Right.
But when your soil is depleted and mostly rock and mineral, very little organic matter, you see anthills all over the place. Because they're busy digging holes in the dirt and hauling organic matter down.
Right.
But if you've got a foot of organic matter, the ants never come to the surface. They're happy where they're at.
Where are you at? You're getting distorted.
I'm in the truck right now.
I'm sorry, you're breaking up.
I'm in the truck right now.
Oh, okay.
It could I had my hand near, I know it happened. I was resting the phone on the steering column. The mic was, yeah.
Okay, cool. All right, so yeah, the good healthy soil, plenty of fowl that will eat the bugs that the soil doesn't, or, you know, that the nutrient plants and soil don't
provide home for.
The birds will take care of the rest, the chickens, the geese, the guineas, the ducks, and the peacocks.
Yeah.
That's what they're designed for. Well, the reason that the farmer is having a problem with insects is that he never practices the land Sabbath, which is one of those 15 agricultural laws. So we have to learn about the land Sabbath. Hybridized seed. You know, there's a law that says you shall not sow your seed with your field with mingled seed. That's hybridized seed. That seed produces produce that is anywhere from 75% short on protein to 600% short on iron, 345% short on copper, and so on down the line.
So is that GMO hybridized?
No, that's when you take two open pollinated seeds, they've been open pollinated for generations. In other words, they're heirloom, all right? Take two heirloom varieties and you cross them with each other. So you end up with a seedless watermelon or sweet corn that's extra sweet, you know. So you were saying, you know, most of the sweet corn you could buy on the market was hybrid. Okay?
Right.
Well, that's why. Because they can bring out certain characteristics that people buy by hybridizing the seed. All right? But it's lacking a lot as a result.
Oh, okay. It's lacking in nutrients.
Yeah, because, you know, it takes a while for it to stabilize and so that the plant's doing everything it's supposed to be doing. You know, you took somebody that was raised for certain conditions and crossed it with somebody that was raised for entirely different conditions and expect the offspring to be decent. Well, it doesn't always happen.
Well, it's kind of like taking a black person and putting them in the desert and expecting them not to have skin and hair problems.
I thought that was sticking a white person in the desert.
Well, that too, but for a different reason. black people need humidity. Most of them. I mean, I guess it depends. My ex-wife and most of the black people that I know, they prefer humid climates because it's healthier for their skin. Their hair and their skin get too dry. Their hair gets brittle and it breaks off. Their skin chaps and they have all kinds of skin problems. They always put lotion and stuff in on their skin and their hair.
Gotcha.
So, yeah. I mean, kind of the same thing. You take something out of its climate, you try to grow it where it's not supposed to grow, or you change its DNA, and it's not going to grow properly in your soil. And it's not going to give you the proper nutrients that you need.
Right. Okay, okay.
Over the radio a time or two. Then there's the landmark laws, catalogs, landmarks, and the soil. How do you maintain that soil? I can show you how to do all of that. And indeed, I think that it's a better form of agriculture than chemical agriculture. In fact, if you're going to practice chemical agriculture, I would say you probably need some other kind of business because American agriculture has been using chemicals and practicing chemical agriculture for about 100 years, and it's no longer self-sustaining, and American agriculture is going into the tank. And I think if you do it, you'll go right into the tank with them.
Right. The prices of this chemical agriculture, it just keeps going up, 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 because you know, they just, they got to mine for all this stuff, you know, and produce mass volumes of it, and they're depleting the areas in which they're mining this stuff from. You got all these areas that are depleted of these nutrients, and so they got to just keep farming more and more and more, and it just keeps getting more and more expensive.
Right, and then we got our neighbor who was so proud that he only sprayed Roundup once a year, and then last year he sprayed twice.
Right, on a product that's not worth very much.
Yeah, and he's, you know, probably going to have to spray two or three times this year.
Right.
For the same reason.
Right.
What we need is a change. We need a change back to what works. And what works are the agricultural laws that God gave us out of Mount Sinai for the express purpose of maintaining soil fertility and human health, which is the basic reason for eating.
God's medicine, God's agriculture. And not man's agriculture.
He gave us free food and medicine.
Yep, and he gave us instructions on how to do it.
And you know what?
Or
they pull you in the court and tell you that you're practicing medicine without a license. You say, hey, I'm not doing it. This is God's instructions.
Exactly.
You know?
Yep.
Take it up with our Heavenly Father.
That's it.
It's health. Now, when you eat potatoes that are lacking in vitamins and minerals, you're going to get cancer, muscular dystrophy, or heart attack. So are the people who buy your produce.
Right. Do you want to poison your community? No, you want to help them. You want to heal them. You want them to be healthy.
Yep.
Now, this marketing plan only includes 100 customers. That's all you need is 100. You want $1,000, 20% from each of your customers out of their marketing budget, to pay you to grow what they want to buy. And you don't grow what people don't want to buy. Take their order, and then you go out and you plant it and grow it.
Right. You grow what you need, what you know you will use, or your animals will use, and then you add to that what you know your community wants and will buy from you.
Yeah, well, what he's saying is you go out and you find people who want to buy your produce, and you ask them specifically, what do you want? And you make a point of planting enough to produce that.
Right, exactly.
So the marketing plan includes 100 customers at $1,000 each. What we're looking for here is a gross program or a gross sale of $100,000 a year. What does it cost to produce it? Well, let's suppose that you don't own a piece of ground and you need to go buy a piece. Would you like to learn how to buy a piece of ground? No money down, no interest, no carrying charges. Do you think you could make a real estate deal like that in America today? I've made many of them, and I've shown people how to do that, the no money down trick.
That's pretty cool. No money down, no interest.
Yeah, I don't know about that, but...
Yeah.
So, in school, we'll show you how to buy a piece of ground if you don't have it. If you've got a piece of ground, are you using it to its maximum potential? Have you thought about putting in a little operation to make that ground pay for itself? You know, if you're paying $500 a month payments on a piece of real estate and you're working someplace to make the $500, what happens if you lose your job? Have you thought about that? That's why I mentioned in the last segment, I need a methodology whereby I can make a living outside the system. Now, if you're making a living and you work at Boeing or IBM or some place and you're making your living, that's fine. There's no problem with that. But why don't you think about, gee, what if I lost my job? Could I feed, clothe, and house myself? And could I produce a little extra for some people down the street? You know, back in the Depression years, people were really scrambling to make ends meet.
Whenever we had our deal, you know, Mary and I both had jobs, and we were still growing food in the backyard. We just grew things that we didn't have to babysit. You know, I was studying permaculture. We had our own compost and, you know, all that stuff. We had food that we were growing. The Asians down the street, I'm sure they had jobs, and they worked their garden. And the neighbors across the street from them that started their garden after they started gardening, they had jobs and they started growing food. So you can start while you have a job. That food that you grow will just offset the money you have to spend at the grocery store.
Well, that's, you know, I grew some corn, I grew some zucchini, I grew a lot of bamboo, I grew pepper plants. My pepper plants would go 3 years at a time, and then we'd get a frost. It was enough to kill the plant, but I'd have the pepper plants for 3 years in a row, typically.
Yeah, when I grew up, my parents had a garden for a long time. It wasn't a very big one, but we grew basically what we would eat, and that was it. You know, well, we grew what would grow, and we grew what we would eat. We didn't worry about what other people ate. We grew what we would eat.
Yep.
I remember my dad loved jalapenos, so we definitely grew those. I remember cucumbers and melons. We grew melons. I don't remember much else. I think bell peppers. I don't remember what all we grew, but I remember those items. So, yeah. You know, and it doesn't take much, really, to get started. Now, if you lose your job and you got to go full-time, it's a different story. But, you know, to get started, to kind of learn the ropes, you know, you can do that on the side, you know.
I was a kid during World War II. Everybody had a victory garden. Everybody grew something. And what we didn't have, Mrs. Birchfield had. What Mrs. Birchfield didn't have, where Mrs. Johnson had. And those people, you know, when you have three or four pear trees, you're going to have more pears than you can eat. You take those surplus pears and trade it to somebody that's got apples. And the guy that's got apples, you're trading your squash for, or you're trading cucumbers or something else.
That's another thing. If we have a collapse and everybody's growing food, you know,
yep,
we're not going to have too many problems.
Yep.
Now, people will...
Like the gangster gardener said, I love that phrase. He said, growing your own food is like printing your own money.
Yep.
I love that.
Yep, but we need to steal that and call radio stations and just play that. Just play that to them whenever they answer.
Yeah, if they put it on the air.
Well... You wait until they put you on the air.
Well, if you play it enough, they'll probably start saying it.
Oh, just say it to them then, yeah.
Yeah.
Hey, man, grow your own garden. Growing your own garden is like printing your own money.
Oh, yeah, we should all make flyers and put them on all the bulletin boards that does that. Growing your own food is like printing your own money.
Ooh. Print up some fake dollar bills with a head of cabbage in the middle.
There
or
you
carrot.
Go.
Or a tomato.
Hey, that could be our CES money. I mean, CES exchange tickets for our project.
Just print up some Monopoly money that has vegetables in the middle, and it, you know, it has that phrase in it. In gardens we trust.
In gardens we trust.
You know? And, you know, somewhere in there written, you know, growing a garden is like printing your own money.
Yeah. I like it.
Or we had a seed line. We had a little seed line where the seed packets are about the shape and size of the dollar bill. And every one has, instead of a president's face, it has a picture of the vegetable there.
There you go. Let it be written. Let it be done.
When you have three or four pear trees, you're going to have more pears than you can eat. You take those surplus pears and trade it to somebody that's got apples. And the guy that's got apples, you're trading your squash for, or you're trading cucumbers or something else. Now, people will drive 40 miles to buy organic produce.
Springfield, Missouri.
The Wadley program, they thought that what you needed to do was to locate this farm or your store within 40 miles of a population area of 50,000 people. We discovered that you only need 100 customers, and 12% of the population is interested in organic produce. Now,
so we have about 900 people in Stockton, and probably another 900 people in the surrounding areas. So we have the potential right there.
Well, according to one of my friends, the main people coming down 39 to go to the lake in the summertime are from Wichita, Kansas. But, if word gets out, people will stop by our farm to buy organic produce on their way back to Kansas City.
They'll probably be coming from Kansas City, too, because if they come down 13, they might come over from, they might go down J, or they might come over from Bolivar. But, yeah, I mean, if they're going to Kaplinger, because Kaplinger is also a tourist attraction.
A little less known, though.
Less known, but people go there to fish a lot of time. But people going back and forth from Kaplinger to Stockton will definitely see us. But, yeah, word gets out, and they'll see our flyers. And, of course, I'll be in Kansas City advertising, so people in Kansas City will be talking about us. And then we got Springfield, we're close enough to Springfield where people might come to Springfield to buy in bulk like Banana Girl does. she goes to the market, she buys in bulk.
She might as well open up her own grocery store. She eats so many fruits and vegetables.
Right?
She'd be her own customer, but, she might as well, get a business license. And she sells all of her stuff to herself.
Well, she might be able to make some money on the side, yeah. She already makes enough money on the side with her YouTube and her book, but she'll be able to make some more money selling her food.
Yeah, and her current boyfriend pimping her out.
I don't know about that. I don't think she has a current boyfriend.
Yeah, supposedly her last boyfriend was pimping her out to the raw vegan society, whatever.
Or maybe trying to.
Yeah.
I think he was pimping himself out.
Okay.
That's what I think it was. He wasn't entirely faithful.
Ah.
So, or something like that. I don't know. It's all hearsay evidence.
Shame on him.
If you're living in an area that's producing a lot of organic produce already, then you've got competition. And what you need is 100 customers that will buy from you.
Maybe you have competition. You just, maybe you sell things that they're not selling. Or, you grow things that they're not growing, or both.
So you go out and you get 5 customers. And then you go out and you get 5 more.
Right. You start with what you need, what your friends and family need, and you grow from there, 5 customers at a time or whatever.
Can we get our greenhouse going?
Huh?
If we get our greenhouse going and we get as big as I'm, desiring to do, we could have a whole crop of pineapples in there going, all year long.
True that.
We can sell organic pineapples, locally grown.
That would be awesome.
People would freak out. It's like, wait a minute. This is a pineapple? It's grown here? And it tastes like this?
I know, right? It's kind of like, people will freak out, kind of like that lady freaked out on that one video where that guy grew the pumpkin there in Pasadena. The pumpkin looked like a squash, and it was as tall as she was. It was long and skinny. She's like, you grew that? He goes, yeah, it's a little skinny. She goes, just a little. It was funny. But she was amazed of, you know, but it was a pumpkin. You know, it wasn't as amazing as growing pineapple or bananas in the Midwest. But, you know, it would get us the same reaction, yeah.
It's kind of like this. Birds of a feather flock together.
That's it.
So if you came to me and you sold me on the idea of organic produce, I would tell 10 of my friends. Those 10 friends all have 10 friends who in turn have 10 friends.
People in our community who have to go to Springfield to probably get organic stuff that they're not willing to grow themselves and be like, hey, we don't got to go to Springfield anymore. We can get it right around the corner at DD&D.
There you go.
And then whatever we don't grow, we have friends that grow stuff too. And they don't live right off the main drag like we do. And that's one of the reasons why I wanted to be on the main drag. You know?
Well, yeah, one of those friends is talking to me about sharecropping with him. Because he can't exactly afford to pay me, but he can't do the work himself. So, you know, he's willing to give me some of the produce.
Right.
You know.
But then you got to drive how many miles every day to work?
Well, however often it takes in order to get the work done.
Right.
Whatever his mother-in-law and his wife can't do, you know, I'd come in and do that stuff. And they'd keep an eye on it and tell me.
Oh, okay.
You know, that kind of
thing. Yeah, if it's part-time, that'd be different, because then you're not exacerbating a lot of time over there and neglecting your own field.
Yeah.
You know, that's the problem. We can't be spreading ourselves too thin, helping everybody else, and then we don't take care of ourselves.
And thus I ran my goats tonight because I ran myself a bit too thin.
Right.
Turn half 10 for it.
So, yeah, you got to take care of your bottom line without, you know, you can help other people, but not at your own expense. And you want to help yourself, but not at others' expense.
Yep. So,
a win-win solution.
Now, the people that don't eat organic do not have 10 organic friends.
They might have one.
I mean, it's just, that's the way life is. So you go over to some guy who's a Catholic, and he's going to have 10 Catholic friends. You go to some guy who's a Republican, he's going to have 10 Republican friends.
He might have one Democrat friend, though.
You go to some guy that buys from Walmart, and he's going to have 10 friends that buy from Walmart. I mean, that's just where reality is at. Now, the store, as you...
But like I was saying earlier, while you were goat tracking, you know, even the people who don't care about organics necessarily, if you're giving them better tasting food for the same price that they're going to get their wallpaper paste at the grocery store, they're going to buy flavor, you know, over health. So you're still going to get the non-organic people. You're just going to have to, lure them in by taste.
Oh, we can't buy your food. Why not? It has too much flavor. It's overexciting my taste buds.
progress along in your program. I mean, we start this thing at zero COD. We go out and we start looking for five customers. So you've got to go out and find five customers, but five customers have 10 friends. That's 50. Those 50 have 10 friends. That's 500. Now, you've got to be able to perform. So we need to teach you how, not only how to market it, but how to grow it. And there's a program here developed by Rodale called Companion Planning. Companion Planning.
That's really good, too.
And we learned that from the Indians. You know, the Indians, they used to plant beans, corn, and squash on the same piece of ground. So we pay attention to Rodale, the Indians, and other organic growers, and especially Acres USA.
Acres USA.
If we're going to get into the business, then we want to find out, well, how do the other guys do it? And by doing that, you don't have to reinvent the wheel. You know, there are other fellows that have already been out there doing this. There's other people out there that have organic seed. There's other people out there that have open pollinated seed. There's other people out there that are marketing and can show you how to do the same thing. And so birds of a feather flock together. So I buy organic, and I'm always looking for organic. Everybody that eats organic is always looking for organic. Well, who else has got this? Who else has got this product? So we put a store in, and in the store, we can start adding items, just like a health food store. What do you need for a store? You need an outbuilding. You need a garage. You need someplace on your property. Maybe you have to build one. Maybe you'll have to buy one, have it moved in. You know, these little metal buildings, it doesn't take very much money to buy one of these little metal buildings. And most of your business is going to be done in about 6 months, starting in March through about the end of November, and you're going to be just about completed. So you're only talking about working maybe 6-7 months a year. Look at that, $100,000 a
year. You got his math wrong. He says March to November, only 6 months.
Well, April, May, June, July, August, September, October, November. Yeah, even then, that's eight. Well, he's close to Arkansas. You know, it gets pretty hot, so about 3 months in the middle of summer, you're probably not doing anything.
Right, it's like lunchtime.
It's like we're taking those 3 months off because nothing will grow anyway.
Right.
Yeah, I don't know.
So 6 to 8 months or 6 to 9 months out of the year, depending on what you grow and where you grow it.
Year is what you're shooting for. And you can do that in about 36 months. So you don't quit your job in the morning and go out here and try to do this. What you do is you start doing this on the side, and you start off with five customers, and then you move up to 10, then from 10 to 20, 20 to 40, 40 to 80.
That's what we're doing. I mean, David Ray land most of the time, and I'm still out here working to pay the bills.
Honestly, I'm on the land about half the time, to be honest.
So, and he's out working, too. So we're working to bring revenue in to support the project till the project starts.
Right. So.
So, yeah, you start out, baby steps, and work your way up from there. Kind of like investing money into the stock market with compounding interest.
Right. And, the more successful he gets, the more often I'll be here, the more likely, I'll be able to bring a young lady over here and say, see, this is where I live, as opposed to, don't look, that's where I live in.
Yeah. We need to get David Ray a girlfriend so he'll be more motivated.
In about 3 years, you can have 100 customers producing $100,000 a year. on a piece of ground that you may not own today, but if you do own it, we could start completing on the ground right away. And if your ground is not organic now, we can go to work on creating organic soil, creating an organic garden. How big a piece of ground do you need? How big is an acre? Well, you know, you can buy little tractors, the little small 25, 30 horsepower tractors like a Ford 8M.
Right. Start out with a full push tractor and then work your way up from there.
I'm using a push mower.
A push mower, a push tractor, a walk behind tractor. Because that's only going to cost you probably 10% of what, you know, 10, 25% of what a bigger tractor is going to cost you. And it'll get you started. And then you can work your way up. You can graduate to something bigger.
Well, an 8M, honestly, we might be able to pick one up. Because I think I know somebody who just is not going to use theirs. And I don't think they've had enough time to destroy it. So we might be able to pay for it what they paid for it or less. Because it was in excellent condition when they got it.
The ones that bought your tractor?
Yep. My tractor. Yeah, as if I owned it.
The one you wanted.
The one I wanted.
Right.
The one I wanted, but I didn't have the means of getting it.
Well, it's not like new anymore.
Well, no, it was old when they got it. It's just the guy who had it took real good care of it.
Right, but these guys probably didn't take real good care of it.
Well, the brother who was given to it is the one who's real detail orientated.
Oh, he's OCD like you and me?
Yeah. Yeah. And if anything, he might have been guilty of changing the spark plugs too often and the oil too often. And so it's probably in good shape. as long as his brother didn't get a hold of it.
Okay, if he's in charge of it, then I would say it's probably in pretty good shape. Yeah, I agree. Okay.
And then the old implements that go with them, you know, they're really dirt cheap. And they're dirt cheap because farming in America has failed. Everybody's gone into mass production. What they're trying to do now is going to monoculture. What we want to do is agriculture.
Monoculture, what's that mean?
Monoculture, that means you grow nothing but wheat or you grow nothing but soybeans.
Like our neighbor.
That's our neighbor.
Right. Kind of like polytheism and monotheism.
Yep.
Okay.
Well, we want to do a polyculture.
40 different things.
Right. Polyculture.
And that's because the more variety that you have to sell, then the greater is the appeal when Mary Housewife wants to drive out here 10, 20, 30 miles to your store in your little farm.
Not only that, but you grow multiple different things and they complement each other as far as growing, and they're not fighting each other for nutrients.
Right.
They're complementing each other.
And it makes an experience for the family.
Oh, and they don't deplete the soil like mono gardening does.
Well, that's where six chemicals come in. I mean, you know.
Right, but they're only replacing six of them.
That's all you see, isn't it?
Sure. If you want to eat flavored cardboard.
And pretty soon, you'll put in a pond. And in that pond, you'll stock fish. And when you stock fish in the pond, then your customers come out and pay you a fee to catch the fish that you stocked in the pond,
which is another thing we planned on doing.
Yep.
that our fish are going to be decorative fish that are edible fish at the same time. So we can actually make more off of them by selling them for ponds. What is it, koi?
Koi, yeah. I was planning on selling those as pets, but if we can't sell them, hey, they're a carp.
Right, and they're kosher.
And they're kosher.
Yeah, you want other things in your pond, too, that are not kosher, like mussels or, you know, freshwater oysters, crawdads, shrimp, things of that nature, frogs. You don't want to eat those.
Especially in ponds that are polluted by your neighbor's Monsanto whatever.
Yeah. You don't want to eat those things, but they help fix your pond, along with bamboo and cattail. Cattails are great to water filtration systems. And there's other plants that you can plant in your water to help with water filtration and cleaning your water as well.
I forget the details, but look up how much water a single mussel pumps through its body in a day.
How much water do mussels,
say clams.
Mussel clams.
You say clams.
What?
How much water does a clam move a day?
Move per day. Here it is. They filter between 10 and 15 gallons of seawater per day.
All right. Well, they've got freshwater clams as well, and they do the same. And could you imagine if you had 10,000 of those in the bottom of your pond?
Right. Just one mussel will filter 10 to 15 gallons a day.
All right. So your pond, 10,000 clams on the bottom of the pond, it's going to filter and sequester 10,000 gallons worth of polluted water. It's going to filter it and sequester the poisons in it every day.
Yep. This one here says blue mussels will filter 5 liters per day, which is
about a half a gallon.
Half a gallon. Well, yeah, half a gallon. So,
that's 2.5 gallons.
Yeah. So, yeah. You know, let's see here. 20 to 30 gallons. What is this? Oysters. Oysters do 20 to 30 gallons. So yeah, it depends on what kind of mussels or whatever you have in your water. You know, and how many you have. You'll start out with a couple, but they breed like crazy. Or they reproduce like crazy. I don't think they breed. I think they're hermaphrodites. What do you call those? Unisex?
Well, they kick out spawn, whatever it is. It doesn't take long for them to cover the bed of an entire pond.
There you go. So, yeah, you just get a handful of them, throw them in the water, bam, they'll take over. And you'll have fresh, clean water. Between them, the crawdads, and the shrimp, you're good to go.
Yep, yep.
Source of income.
Oh, so
the pond serves as irrigation, and it also serves as a cash cow. When Mom and Dad come out to pick raspberries, and the children go over to catch fish in the pond and then pay you to go fishing. These kinds of operations have been around for a long time. They're not brand new.
You might actually want to catch your own fish. That way you don't have hooks and stuff in your pond.
Yeah.
Unless you have nets, you know, you can let them net fish.
Yeah.
You don't wade
in the fish pond.
Yeah, but I don't want a bunch of hooks in the pond. That's just my own personal preference.
I hear you.
Unless
those hooks equal dollars.
I'm sorry?
Unless those hooks equal major dollars.
Well, you know, our land's also going to be a retreat.
True enough.
We don't
need
people
wading in the pond.
Yeah, we don't need people getting hooks in their feet.
It's a trout farm in which...
If it was a trout farm, it would be a different story.
You pay, they'll furnish you with the equipment that you need, the fishing pole and the bait and everything you want, and you just go out here and catch your fish, and then you just pay for the fish as you catch them.
Right, because they probably just have a big fishing hole. You probably go there and you have your shoes on and your fishing pole and your hooks, and you just throw it in the water and bam. You know, you're not running around barefooted or, you know, whatever, where we'll have a retreat. People could be running around barefooted. I would like to run around barefooted.
So what we do is we rig up a fish corral, and when somebody wants to catch a fish, you send them with the fish net and close up the corral so that they... You know, give them a cup of cat food and a fish net and show them where the fish corral is. And, you know, they just draw in all the fish and catch the ones they want with the net.
That's it. Yeah, that was just as much fun catching a fish with the net. Actually, probably more fun catching a fish with a net than he will with a hook.
Like, Mom, look at the water. It's churning. All we have to do is throw these catfish pellets out here. You know, the cat food. Pellets of cat food out here, and all these fish come churning up. And...
Right. Just try to catch them with the net. Yeah, that actually sounds pretty fun.
Look, I just scooped up 20 in one shot. I can't even pick it up.
Catch six fish, you're buying six fish. Now, that's called a you-pick operation because, you see, the owner is selling fish that you caught or you picked. So you do the same thing with raspberries, blackberries, so on. Now, let me give you a closer here.
Closer.
What do you think the most valuable crop is? Marijuana?
Marijuana!
3 hours, 3 minutes, and 33 seconds.
All right. So what did that graph say the most valuable crops were? Marijuana, coca, and what?
Yeah, they're all illegal. But he said he can produce even better. So we need to listen again and take note of what he calls cash crops.
Right. The one that you were saying that we need to grow was tomatoes because it was the best one on that list.
Yeah, it was the best one on that chart. But he's saying blackberry, raspberries, strawberries.
Yeah, raspberries and blackberries were the top two on the list. Which we'll be growing, blackberries.
Well, we could get thornless blackberries and then people would really come and pick them.
I know, right?
You pick operation because, you see, the owner is selling fish that you caught or you picked. So you do the same thing with raspberries, blackberries, so on. Now let me give you a closer here. What do you think the most valuable crop is? Marijuana? No, it's raspberries at $43,000 an acre. Blackberries.
Now, they didn't have those on the chart, did they?
I don't think so.
Right.
$22,000 an acre. Blueberries, $8,000 an acre. Peaches, $8,000 an acre. Strawberries, $4,000 an acre. soybeans, about $300 an acre.
$300 an acre. We need to give this to our neighbor. Dude,
well,
you're only making $300 an acre. We can make you tenfold that.
Well, we do it. We do it, and then we talk to them and say, listen, we got more customers than we can handle.
Yeah, how can we employ you to copy what we're doing? We want you to be our copycat. Shoot, we'll corner the market there. I mean, it'd be like a humongous section there between him, his brother, and us.
It'd be like, what the hell? What's going on?
I know.
We're selling the most valuable drug on the planet. It's called strawberries.
Raspberry. Oh, yeah. You go to buy blackberries in the grocery store, they're like 2-3 times as much as a strawberry.
Yeah, especially if you do the raspberries that are as, it take 3 of them fill your hand.
Oh, that'd be awesome, yeah.
Why would we want to grow soybeans, wheat, and corn when there is so little in it?
Right, only grow, well, you probably don't want to eat soybeans anyways, according to David Ray, the only soybeans you really want are the ones from China where they ferment them properly.
Oh, where you ferment them properly.
Or you can do it, yeah. So you only grow what soybeans you might want, provided your Roundup Ready neighbors don't already grow it, because you don't want cross-contamination with their GMO crop.
Especially when their GMO crop provider will sit his pants off of you because you might have some of their soybeans on your land.
Right, or their DNA.
Yep.
Yeah, their contamination. You might have some of their contamination on your land, so they'll sue you for them polluting your land. So, yeah, provided your GMO neighbors don't grow these things, only grow those things in which you need and your community is wanting.
And if they ask you for something your neighbor's growing, GMO, you tell them, well, I'm sorry, couldn't grow that this year. Why not?
Right.
Because my neighbor's growing it. So, well, I don't want to sell you a cross-contaminated product.
Right, a polluted product.
Yeah. You know, he's going to cross-contaminate.
But you can order it from somebody else who grows it organically and sell it in your store.
True.
There you go. That's what you do. You buy it organically from someone who's already growing it.
When we can be growing the vegetables and crops for little mom-and-pop customers that are going to be paying the retail price, and it's worth $1 a square foot, $43,000 an acre. Now, that's what we're shooting for.
Right, minimum $1 an acre.
Also available on CD, as is all of our schools. They're on CD. And I'd like to recommend that you come to school, because if you can see, get your fingers in the dirt, and you can actually walk around and see how it's done. You know, it adds an awful lot to the program. If you can't, you can always come to school at a later date. You can take the program on CD, and you can come to school. Now, we also have another program here we've been involved in for many, many years, and it's very simple. Once you go to school here, if you want to come back and bone up next year or the year after, you can come back free. So once you've paid for the class, you can come back as many times as you want, catch up, bone up on what's there. Remember the phone number, it's 417-273-0903. 1-800-327-6767. And we're online, georgegordon.net. Simple. Once you go to school here, if you want to come back and bone up next year or the year after, you can come back free. So once you've paid for the class, you can come back as many times as you want, catch up, bone up on what's new. Remember the phone number, it's 417-273-4967. And we're online, georgegordon.net. Simple. Once you go to school here, if you want to come back and bone up next year or the year after, you can come back free. So once you've paid for the class, you can come back as many times as you want, catch up, bone up on what's new. Remember the phone number, it's 417-273-4967. And we're online, georgegordon.net.
Georgegordon.net.
Yep. Yeah, I'm glad you finally got to that podcast. I've been trying to get you to listen to it forever.
Come to the email machine, send me an email request. Stand by. We'll be right back with the best school that we offer here called Mosaic Law. Hang on.
Mosaic Law.
Yep. You go through all 500 some odd codes, regulations, standards, and guidelines in Scripture.
Right. Yeah, and then the podcast or this audio says George Gordman, The Law Hour. I have listened to some of his stuff before. You have had me listen to some of his stuff before. I just hadn't listened to this one before. And the only reason why I listened to it as early as I did is because I put it in the wrong folder and I had it on my thumb drive. I had it. And I still have it in the folder for the comedian George Carlin.
George Carlin.
I dropped it into that folder and put it down my thumb drive. And it just happened to play. It was the first thing to play in that folder. And I was like, oh, okay. There it is. I couldn't find it. I lost it. I put it in the wrong folder.
You idiot.
You idiot. So, yeah, that concludes our podcast, or DD&D podcast, at DementedDungeonsAndDragons.com. I should have gave the phone number at the beginning of the podcast, but you can get the phone number at DementedDungeonsAndDragons.com. It's at the very top. And I just did a my CC cleaner, so it doesn't remember anything that I had in my browser history anymore. So,
oh, no!
I have to physically look up, because I don't know how to spell Demented Dungeons and Dragons. All right. Dial 563-999-2010. Extension 256012. Again, that phone number is 563-999-2010. Extension 256012. Right now, during the winter, we're doing it at 7 p.m. on Sunday, Central Time. But once Daylight Savings Time rolls around during the summer, we'll be doing it at 8 p.m. Central Daylight Time.
Because I typically work until dark.
Right.
I messed up yesterday.
Yeah, when we're working on the land, we typically work till dark, and then we do whatever we got to do after that.
Which, by the way, I woke up around 4 this morning, and the moon was out. And so I actually got up and started working until the moon set, and then I came in and took a short nap. and an hour later I was out when the sun was rising.
Did you realize at what time this morning?
I really woke up at 4.
No. You realized at 7 o'clock this morning that you missed the podcast at 7 o'clock last night.
Yeah. But, oh,
shit. It took him 12 hours to realize that he missed the podcast.
You're like, wait a minute. Today's Monday. Oh, no!
So, yes, we need somebody to help David Ray remember the podcast on Sundays.
Yeah.
Besides myself. Because sometimes I text him, and he don't remember, and it don't work. So he needs a little bit of a little bit extra motivation. Find him a woman to help him remember things.
Yeah, like anniversaries and birthdays and.
Right. DementedDungeonsAndDragons.com. Oh, we're also on Facebook, so don't forget to like us on Facebook.
Woo-hoo!
Boop, boop. Okay.
All right.
3 hours and 16 minutes. So long, farewell, auf Wiedersehen, goodbye.
Yeah, let me know how the upload goes on this. Bye.
Good night. Oh, hey.
Oh.
Hey.
Yeah.
Don't forget, tomorrow's Valentine's Day. Happy Valentine's Day!
You just told everybody I don't have a girlfriend. What am I going to Valentine's for?
I don't know. Okay, bye.
Bye.